Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Yeah, 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning, back on Monday. Beautiful morning. If you're going somewhere for the weekend, perhaps, you're getting out early, or possibly finishing up the work week like ourselves here on the Steve Cochran Show, or possibly starting the work week, or just listening from your kitchen table, whatever it might be. Welcome to the show. We got you today. 312-981-7200.
They might be listening in bed.
I know a lot
of people wake up to the WGN radio. Right.
Or if you're listening in bed, I was just assuming people, maybe they got the, I have the image in my head of a cup of coffee at the kitchen, the Formica table.
Yep.
And they're sitting there and they're like listening and the radio is above the sink.
My husband gets coffee and brings it back to the bed and he listens on the app.
That's how we do it.
My wife does the same thing. She confessed to me that she goes downstairs, gets the coffee, gets back into bed.
That's a great, well, you know, I'll change the intro there then. And for all of you still in bed, but drinking coffee in bed, welcome to the show. It's a great show today, the Friday edition of Steve Cochran Show. Coming up here at 6:20, Lou Manfredini for his Lou's First Call, which we do every Friday here on the show. Also coming up later in the program, Tom Rivers this hour. We'll talk about what's happening in London. Protests are getting underway as the President Trump, is in England, in Britain, in London. He started off his trip yesterday, but he's already done a fireworks display this morning with an interview, of a wide-ranging interview with The Sun. We'll talk about that. And also coming up a little bit later in the show, Troy Murray's going to join us, of course, color analyst, to talk about contracts. The Blackhawks, we're trading contracts now, which, of course, Dave explained to me last week how that works. And the Blackhawks found a suitor for Marian Hossa's contract. We'll talk about that coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Also, later in the show, we're going to talk with Bo Burnham, the man who has written and directed his first film, the film called Eighth Grade, which is out in theaters this week. It's a very interesting movie, an authentic look at the life of an eighth grade girl written by a 27-year-old man. So we will talk to him about the contradictions and what that means to be able to write an authentic movie, a character movie, about someone you've never been.
I'm excited to hear that because we just had an eighth grade girl. We have they call him a rising freshman now.
Is that, that's what the eighth grade is?
Right. That's how they say it these days.
Rising freshman.
Yeah, so.
Although, I have to tell you, in college now, and you've got a couple of years to wait for this, Mayor, they're not freshmen anymore. They are first years.
Oh, that's right. First years.
First years. I don't know if that's the same in high school.
I think they're still called freshmen. They're not as politically correct yet. A freshman.
Do they still do the hazing? Like freshman stuff where like the first week they write stuff on your arm and stuff like that? Remember they did that?
I don't know. They write on their arms on themselves. So.
Yeah.
I think hazing is frowned upon.
I wish I could go back to 19, whatever that was, 87. And have the country where we're at right now, because that was a fearful first week of high school. All right, let's start the show with the top 6 to 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, let's get right to it. President Trump making friends across the pond this morning in a wide-ranging spitball interview with the Sun newspaper. Trump called out Theresa May for wrecking the exit from the EU and hinted that the trade deal between our countries was now off. And he went on to slam the mayor of London, saying he was doing a terrible job. Well, jolly ho.
He Trump said, I told her how to do it, and she didn't listen to me.
Yeah, we'll talk about that coming up with Tom Rivers. Trump has gone full pro wrestling for this Europe trip. Before he goes into his match, in this case, meetings, he has to do his interviews with Mean Gene Okerlund. That's how it feels. Every time he's about to start something, he goes and does a wide-ranging interview or session on Twitter,
Did he really say he felt unwelcome in London because of the protests?
He has, the protests are beginning now. He has something to say about not being welcome in England. He's said this a couple times, but yeah, he is not happy that there are protests there.
Because he is not welcomed in England.
Yeah.
The overwhelming majority of the population do not want him there.
And to be fair, and this is the last point of the first item, the protesters said they are not un-American protests. They are protesting that the president of the United States is anti-British. And that's how they believe they perceive President Trump. More politicians are coming forward, opening up and dealing with the shame of being tricked by Sacha Baron Cohen. Cohen, the comedian who brought us Ali G, Borat, and Bruno, is reportedly doing a new interview prank show for Showtime and has successfully pulled the wool over the eyes of Dick Cheney, Sarah Palin, trying to make some sort of despicable act out of this. And the former congressman and now talk show host Joe Walsh is now joining in, saying he was duped. Well, he was? Did Cohen act?
I think Roy Moore came out. Yep, Roy Moore.
On Walsh, did Cohen act like he was collecting child support?
This is Ricky Bobby.
I was waiting for... Yeah, Joe Moore as well. So this will be an interesting show. It starts this Sunday. It's the best press week you could possibly have
for
a new show.
The common denominator here is it feels like, and it sounds like all of these people said awful things, not realizing that they were saying awful things. I don't know how.
Joe Walsh, I mean, the bit that already seems pretty funny, and Joe Walsh called it out, at least Joe Walsh has rolled back that he's that angry about it. Like, at first, it was all indignation, and now he's like, I guess it was funny. In the piece, I guess, Sacha Baron Cohen teased out, are you for preschoolers with guns? That was the thing, because he was like, you believe in guns, you believe in preschoolers. He tried to slip it in on Joe Walsh, and Walsh was like, what? Like, so I have a feeling it's going to be funny. So, hate crime charges filed against a man who was caught on video berating a woman for wearing a Puerto Rico t-shirt at the Forest Preserve Park, Cook County. The man was seen verbally harassing and physically intimidating the woman. The video went viral for the ignorance of the man in question, but also because of a Forest Preserve police officer who stood idly by while it was happening. The police officer has resigned. Interesting story about the innocent bystander. John was talking about it yesterday. We did the Mincing Rascals yesterday. It's a very interesting take about what's a fireable offense. He resigned, but the question being, should someone lose a job for that kind of indifference that was shown on the video? And it was a 50-50 split on the panel, people saying yes and no. So, yes, it's a tough one to get in on. Now it's time for the Steve Cochran Show Foodborne Illness Report. 90 people from Illinois reportedly fell ill from lettuce, some cases linked to salads from McDonald's. Which is the worst?
I mean, this is why you don't eat salad.
Well, this
is... Oh, wait a minute,
no,
Steve.
No, no, no. There's nothing worse than getting sick from trying to eat healthy, right? I mean, you're going to get a salad. There's a quarter pounder in your face, and you're like, I'll go with the salad, and then you get sick.
You could get... Whether you're trying to eat healthy or not, though, Justin, you could still...
Right. It's fast food karma, really. If you decide to go with the salad when you could have had the double quarter pounder with cheese, you deserve something else.
I used to love those McDonald's salad shakers that came in a cup.
Oh, yeah.
Those were good. I just had a caramel sundae last week from McDonald's. When I asked Pat after, I'm like, would you mind stopping at McDonald's for a sundae? He's like, really? That was delicious.
You never hear about foodborne illnesses from caramel sundaes.
Caramel sundaes, no.
Yeah, there you go. And then finally, you know when you said, man, doesn't it seem like there's a lot of mosquitoes out here? Well, you're not wrong. Cook County is reporting a very high percentage of mosquitoes this summer.
They were saying that back in the spring when we were getting all that rain, and it's worse than I thought. And I was working in my yard a couple nights this week. You just can't do it. Yeah. I mean, I was getting eaten alive.
And I put off on, I was doing the same thing last weekend, and it's still, they didn't even care.
Yeah. Yeah, they're big, too. They're big and mean.
I live in the heart of the city, and I was convinced that the bus smog had killed off any bug life, because I never see any mosquitoes. And I, too, in my area that has no wooded area, was dealing with a ton of mosquito bites over the week. So that's your top six at six.
That's it!
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
All right, time for the Lou Manfredini.
It's the time of the show for Lou's First Call.
All right, there we go. I had to get the pay honor to John DeCoste, I guess. 312-981-7200. Lou's first call. Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It on the line. Lou, good to talk to you, buddy.
Hello there, Justin. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. I am great. No complaints.
No complaints. That's how we like it.
Yep.
This segment is sponsored by American Weathermakers. We got some stuff to give away as well to the winner. But let's talk to Bill. Bill from Streamwood. You got Lou Manfredini for Lou's first call. What do you want to ask him?
Hi, Lou. How you doing?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good. I have a cement patio deck on my yard, and it has some hairline cracks in it and stuff, and it's getting worn. Is there any way you could put a Trex deck on top of that?
Is it sound? In other words, is it pretty flat?
Yeah, it's pretty flat, and it has some hairline cracks, but other than that, it's in good shape.
I mean, if you were going to, first you got to make sure you have enough elevation, meaning that if you put decking over the top of it, if you're coming out of a patio door or something like that, you have room because you're going to raise it up again, right?
Right, yes.
You have that?
Yes.
Okay. So you have a couple choices. There are some modular deck systems. There are deck squares that you can buy that are made. They make them out of Ipe. They make them out of redwood. They're 12 by 12. They're interlocking, almost like, have you ever seen those floors like sport court that we use on a basketball court outside?
Right, yeah.
Those look really nice. It would cost you a lot less than the Trex because in order to do a Trex deck, you'd have to put some sort of sleepers down on the concrete and mechanically fasten them. The nice thing about this modular deck system is that if the concrete were to ever shift or something were to dip, you literally could take up those tiles because they're just lying there with a little perimeter banding around it to kind of finish it off. And you could repair the concrete and put them right back down.
Oh, nice. Where do they sell those at?
Concrete modular deck pads you probably could get either. You'd definitely find them online, but you hear us talk a lot about this company called Fox Home Center, which is down in Alsip. You could go down there and talk to them. I bet they could source them for you.
There you go.
I see them.
Every trip.
I'm looking at them everywhere online. These are cool. I think I'm going to get
so
them.
They're so cool. They're so cool. They work great for rooftop decks, for patio retrofits like this where you want to make it look really nice. There's different patterns. They make them out of synthetic. I mean, it's not cheap, but it looks beautiful.
What do you do when you get to the edges, Lou?
So you're going to put a banding like a curb, almost like a finished piece, and then those will have to get cut, you know. But you'll cut it and shape it and finish it off. It looks really sharp.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the call.
Welcome.
Lou's first call. Bill. Bill's going to get an AprilAire event-based thermostat, which allows you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone. From American Weathermakers, a 60-minute man, call 855-955-HVAC.
Hey,
how
Lou.
About that?
Guess who's having an anniversary today here?
Guess who's having an anniversary today here?
It's a wedding anniversary.
Oh, you.
Nope.
That was a good answer. That was a good
guess. Mine is
guess.
August 12th, if anyone cares.
But I knew it was coming up.
Yes.
I'll give you a hint.
Who is having a wedding anniversary there?
Blanket to win it.
And it's
Ennett. Dave Ennett.
To win it? Dave Ennett?
Yeah. That's the name of our lung association team that we follow Dave up and down the Ennett to win it. But Dave Ennett having his wedding anniversary today.
Number 33, Lou.
We have all met Dave Ennett's lovely bride.
Karen. She's amazing.
Right? Amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And every time I see her, I say, what? You couldn't have done better than this?
I say the same thing.
Right. And she just kind of gets this smirk.
I mean, about her, I say she could have done better.
Man. Yeah, 33 years. Right. That is, you know, one of my favorite things on my show is when someone will call in and it'll typically be a woman asking a question, and then she'll say, I need to know about whatever, but then she won't quite know, and I ask a question back, and then you hear the husband in the back, like, yelling at her, no, what do you mean, you know, because he doesn't want to call. And then when I'll ask, and I'll joke, and I say, how long have you been married to that person? And she'll say, 44 years, or whatever, or 33 years. That is, for any of us that are married, That's an amazing accomplishment, and it's to be honored for sure, Dave. So
there you go.
Happy anniversary to both of you.
You've been bestowed an honor.
There are
a Manfredini honor.
I believe there are a bunch of us here who got married. It was 1985, I think. Our boss Todd Manley, John DeCoss, and Mary Vandeveld. They all got married in 85.
It was the Bears.
A good year.
I was say,
and the Bears. Oh, by the way, the Bears.
Oh yeah.
You guys are all excited about football. And you're like, we should just get married.
Yeah,
we should get married.
This is so great. Let's get married.
This may not ever happen. Again, let's get married.
They get the coach to officiate.
Right. Yeah, right, it's probably why Dave always wears that headband.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it.
It says things on it. It says Roselle on it.
Right. Exactly. Lou Manfredini, Mr. Fix-It. What time's your show Saturday mornings?
Tomorrow morning, starting live at 7 a.m., 7 to 10 a.m. Any questions you have, just give us a call. We will be there for you.
That's great. Lou Manfredini joins us for the Lou's First Call every Friday. Thanks, Lou. Have a great weekend.
See you guys.
All right, there you go. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. Tom Rivers is in London. We'll talk with him about what's happening with the president's visit there as protests get underway. And we'll continue here with Steve Cockroach on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
My buckthorn is exploding.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman here, 720 WGN, Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Steve Grzanich, Joanne Jeanette here. Steve Cochran off. He's back on Monday, 312-981-7200. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Troy Murray about the Marian Hossa contract trade. And who's coming back? Marcus Kruger back to the Hawks. The Hawks love to do this, Dave. They love to bring back players from the heyday that have moved on, mostly because of salary cap issues, and now they get to come back.
Well, they brought Brandon Saad back.
Right.
That's probably the best example
Sharpie
of that.
Sharp was another one, yeah.
Marcus Kruger is a guy who would, I think it will definitely make an impact and help this team. And, you know, I think they didn't want to let him go in the first place, but they kind of had to.
Yeah.
So
we'll talk with Troy Murray about that. Of course, coming up a little bit later, we'll talk about the new show on HBO, Sharp Objects, which is based on the novel written by Gillian Flynn, starring Chris Messina, Amy Adams, Patricia Clarkson. Chris Messina will be in studio with us this morning. We'll also play a little bit of the conversation with Bo Burnham, the filmmaker who is releasing his film this weekend called Eighth Grade, which is getting a lot of reviews, about an authentic look at an eighth grade girl's life. Through the eyes of a 27-year-old man who directed or wrote the film. So we'll talk about what it means to make a film about a character that you've never lived in, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
All right. But before we do any of that, of course, the big news this morning, the president in England, in London, doing meetings with the Prime Minister, Theresa May, also scheduled to talk a little bit more. There's so much that's going on there as protests are underway. The president had an opportunity to have a nice dinner last night, and then this morning, the bombshell in the Sun newspaper, a wide-ranging interview that was really critical of British government. Tom Rivers from ABC News is in London, and he joins us on the line now. And Tom, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
You got it. Just a typical quiet day here in London.
Right.
I tell you, it's all happening.
So this is it's all kind of coming together at once. The president this morning. I mean, what has been the reaction of this interview that the president did in Sun?
Yeah, I tell you, it's kind of a twofold. One is, you know, diplomatically, this is not done. Whatever you have and whatever you say, you should keep behind closed doors. The flip side of the coin is, it's the white elephant in the room, really. Theresa May, very, very weak as a prime minister. Her government, very, very shaky. Of course, the resignation of two senior cabinet ministers at the end of last week. And people are saying, yes, this path that she's taking, and she's kind of taking a middle road, is one that neither the people on the right that say, look, we just got to cut all ties with Europe and cut individual deals with each country. They're not happy with it. And the other group that says we should have never broken away from the European Union, they're not happy. So it's right down the middle, and she's going to get kicked in the shins on this one.
Yeah.
Really. And I don't think she's going to be able to get it through Parliament in its present form anyway. So, it's a difficult situation,
Tom,
for
the,
her.
The one area that surprises me, especially from a president of the United States, it's one thing to react to policy or talk about trade or even, you know, the political situation, but to say that a political opponent would make a better prime minister, as he talked about with Boris Johnson, that seems to be a little bit afoul.
that's out there, isn't it? We've not seen that before. And as I said, there's probably been countless presidents that said, I get along with these guys better than you, but that never got out in the public domain. And, of course, the president talked to the top-selling tabloid in the country here, The Sun. And, of course, everybody and their mother reads it, and it is out there. And we've got a press conference just in about an hour, if they stick to their schedule out of Checkers. And I would imagine for about 30, 35 minutes, that is going to be the only question that's going to be raised by the American and the British reporters that are out there today. Pounding, pounding, pounding. And you don't want to be in Theresa May's shoes today. This could be very, very embarrassing indeed.
So, Tom, the biggest question, obviously, is can that baby balloon be seen from center court? Over at Wimbledon?
Sadly, it can't. It's a little bit to the north of SW19 in Wimbledon. But it's impressive. I would say get on social media, one-click balloon, and it's probably gone around the world 20 times now. It's out there, and it's about a 20-foot-high balloon of the president, I guess a baby Trump balloon, and it's wearing a diaper, and he's talking on a cell phone. There are questions. Exactly. How do you like that in your mind this morning?
Yeah.
But it's there, and it's all a question of freedom of speech. Ultimately, the mayor of London had to decide whether. He said, yeah, it doesn't matter if you agree with it or not. He said, I grant you 2 hours to fly this thing in London today. So it is up in Parliament Square. So all of the politicians can peer out of their windows and have a look.
The protests, of course, soon to get underway there in London. Does the Sun article and what the president said this morning in that paper, does it add fuel to the fire? Does it motivate the numbers of protesters? Because they were talking about thousands. And now it seems that this article was a shot heard around the world.
You know, it's a good question. I don't know how much more that's going to motivate people to come out today. But again, this the whole anti-Trump thing goes back really toward the campaign and going back to the actual election. There have been some issues that certainly most of the Brits had their own issues with, going back to accusations of sexual harassment. There was a tweet that was from a very far right-wing group here on immigration that the president he even said he shouldn't have, but he retweeted that. That got under people's skin, getting out of the Paris Climate Agreement, et cetera, et cetera. So there's been a number of issues that's been building. In a sense, though, I think the number, if we had this protest a year ago, there'd be more people. And I think right now, domestically, given the state of this government, there's more domestic fish to fry. And although a lot of Brits may not like the president being here, they got to figure out, you know, they got to sweep their own doorstep first.
Tom, as we look at British politics as we know it and try to understand it, the president, it seems to me that there is a side that is in line with more of the president's values, that, that may be more conservative, that want a clearer exit from the EU. They want a tougher stance on terrorism. So it's not that outlandish that the president would be saying these things. The way he said it might be in question, but but he seems to be in line with a current thought in conservative politics in Britain.
Yeah, those that are the quote-unquote Brexiteers, the Leave campaigners, are saying, look, what he says resonates with us. But, of course, that is only one view here in the UK. And if you think back to the referendum, 52% said, let's get away from Europe. 48%, no, let's stick with Europe and try to reform it. So it is kind of cut 50-50 down the country.
Yeah. Tom Rivers is covering the president in London for ABC News. He joins us now. Tom, thanks for taking some time. We appreciate it.
Take care.
There you go. That's a tough assignment for Tom. There's a lot going on. If you are a news reporter, the place to be is London. It's enough to deal with the controversy of what's happening with Brexit. And I think was it Thursday yesterday that the British government put out the white paper about how they and there was a lot of question about how vague it was, but how they were planning to leave the European Union and continue with the trade deals there. The president, of course, saying, "Hey, you know what? If you do this, what you outline in this white paper, then the deal with the United States is off." So it's a very strange moment as two allies, two fierce allies, if you will, are not seeing eye to eye, at least their leadership, at the present moment.
And Justin, just from a business standpoint, the notion that there will be any negotiating on trade deals in the near future is just insane. It's going to be at least 2 years before the government of the UK is in any position to negotiate those trade deals. And in 2 years, this president may not be in office. So that really begs the question again, why bring this up when it's something that's so far away?
Well, he's very comfortable. The president seems to be very comfortable, and you can take it or leave it, but he's very comfortable with speaking his mind to the European press. And he did it with the Angela Merkel conversation about how they're in bed with Russia and they're hurting they're hurting Europe more than the U.S. is and trade deals. And then today with this Sun interview, the question I have is, will he do the same thing before Helsinki when he goes to meet with Vladimir Putin? That'll be interesting to see if he continues this trend of talking to the public before he talks in private.
And there's also a reality, Steve, of a second term. He might be around, you know.
Well, it's possible, yeah. But again, it's so far off into the future that you have to wonder.
Why. Also, another business question. I wonder how much that inflatable baby balloon cost. Any estimate, Steve?
I don't know the cost of it. They have deflated it already, and it's already being shipped to Scotland for the next leg of the president's journey.
Oh, gosh.
The baby will be flying in Scotland.
I don't think that's that. I mean, I get the uproar over it, but it's just like, really? It seems so cliche to have a balloon with a diaper and a cell phone. I'm like, British humor.
We were just at the hot air balloon fest in Lyle, and we watched them fold up those hot air balloons, so I bet the baby got folded up very similar.
They got to make sure. They got to get six guys out there folding the balloon the right way.
Yeah, and remember, we had our own version of this, too. Remember the chicken, the inflatable chicken, the hen that looked like the president.
All right, here, you know what? I have my limits to my hot air balloon comedy.
Sandberg's temperature that she sleeps at her house at is 64 degrees.
I can't feel my fingers anymore. They're numb.
Now, unless you're hanging beef, I don't know that you need to have 64 degrees.
Maybe you should wear these extra gloves. My hands are starting to get sweaty.
What, are you trying to get Vladimir Putin to come by? 64?
You've had this pair of extra gloves this whole time?
Yeah. We're in the Rockies.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I did not know about your temperature issues, Mary, but I was interested because you brought in your bill, and in the bill, they give you guidelines on what ComEd or whatever the energy company in Illinois, they say, here's what the standard is for what your house temperature should be at. They put it on the bill, and it's surprising.
They have, here's your energy efficient neighbors. Here's your other neighbors that are doing pretty good. And then here's you.
And
we are always way off the chart.
Here's you. Yeah. That's how it reads.
And that 64 degrees is our winter sleep temperature. And 68 is the daytime temperature. And the reason why it's 64 is because we could sleep at 65. But sometimes when it's really cold, the house will fall below that. And then the heat will kick on at 65. And then our room is the first one to get hot. And I can't have that.
Does everyone share your temperature?
Pat and I are on the same page. Any other person that steps in our house comes with extra clothing.
Three sweaters, right?
We just had our sister-in-law and brother-in-law in town and their kids, and they had sweatshirts on and socks and slippers the whole time.
When you get those notes from ComEd during the summer with a little update in the lines, but you also get them from the gas company during the winter.
Right.
Aren't you like the really efficient?
We are the efficient gas people. And the our summer temperature, so we had a big talk after we got our last little letter that told us we are these mad abusers. And so we're like, okay, this summer, usually our summer sleep temperature is 66 and our daytime temperature is 70. I'm like, we need to be better about this. Mm-hmm. So we agreed. We're sleeping at 67 and our daytime temperature is 71.
Jeez.
Well, the last little letter we got said, it said their suggested temperature that you should have it at all the time, 78.
No.
78 is great. That's what their little phrase said. Mm-hmm. And then they said, when you go out of town, put it up 10 more degrees.
My AC was broken.
To 88?
We talked about it yesterday.
88, so you're going to come home to a hot box.
That's where, and it was up at 78 or 80, and I'm like, this, I got to go to Target and get a fan. Like, this is 78. That's ridiculous.
For us, it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work for anybody. Yeah. I don't think there's anybody out there right now that's like, what do you mean 78? I love 80.
That's 75. When you start sticking to the plastic on the couch.
Right.
But isn't it worse, and maybe we should have asked Lou this, if you make drastic changes in your temperature because you make your air conditioner work harder?
That's what I've always thought, but that could be a wives' tale. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but
your air conditioning is now fixed.
It's
though.
Fixed. It was an ordeal yesterday, and a good one, but and it all worked out. Everything worked out. But
what was it? Was it a cooling problem or was it a
geez? No, the furnace, you know, that blows the air in the house, the motor blew.
Ooh.
And because I know that because yesterday
Ooh.
We were on the air saying, "Ooh, is it? What is it?
Just
is it
pour
cooling?
Some liquid
oh,
in there? Yeah.
I hope it's $85. It was not $85. It was a lot more, and it was an older furnace, so I had to bite the bullet and get a new one.
Wow. Air conditioner?
Yeah, it's the air conditioner furnace unit. Like okay, they're together, yeah. And so the problem I have is that the actual AC units that are outside on the deck, they're old. They're since I bought that I bought the house in 2015, but they're the same ones from when the house was built in 2001. So they're ready to go, and I've already been told by the AC people that you know these are going to go next. And so I thought this would be the time for them to go, and it wasn't. It was the furnace AC unit. So now they're still, those old ones are still operating. I'm like,
maybe
oh.
Between you, Dave, and I, we can have one of those countdowns as to whose goes out
who's
first.
Goes first.
Dave and I both have old
mine,
ones.
Yeah, add mine to the list, too.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
There
20 years old.
The AC Grim Reaper is hanging out at all of our homes.
You know, and I have to tell you, I walk around during the daytime because I've been playing with my thermostat, too, and I'm like, maybe if I turn it up a little, I can my AC will live another year.
Yeah, right. I do the same thing. My wife gets so mad at me because I'm like, what if we put a couple extra degrees on it so just to take a little pressure off the AC? And I don't think it works that way, but I've tricked my brain to think that's the case. Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to get Troy Murray on the line, talk a little bit about Marian Hossa's contract and the moves for the Blackhawks. But also in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to play a little bit of Bo Burnham, the man who is behind the film Eighth Grade, which comes out this week. A great film, a look at the life of an eighth grade girl written by a 27-year-old man. So we'll talk with comedian Bo Burnham about his new film, which is getting rave reviews.
I got it. I'm patched in.
Guys, let me hear it.
Now, from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
We're locked. Systems check out. Signal across the board. What's the frequency?
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran, who's back on Monday. Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Joanne Jeanette, Steve Grzanich, all here. We got a great show today. Troy Murray joining us coming up at 7:40. Chris Messina, the star of shows like The Mindy Project, Damages. He is in the new HBO show Sharp Objects, which is based on the novel by Gillian Flynn. It's a limited series run. It's not unlike what they did last year, the one with Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon. I'm losing the name.
Right.
I
can't remember. The
one that won all the awards. Yeah. But anyway, it's same concept.
Big Little Lies.
Yeah, Big Little Lies. Same idea of adapting a story. And the first one already, it was last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting story. Sharp Objects was a huge book for Gillian Flynn, who's also the author of Gone Girl.
Gone Girl, yeah, that's a good
one. So that's, we're going to talk with Chris Messina. He'll be in studio coming up in the 8 o'clock hour.
I imagine there's going to be a line of other staff members from WGN Radio outside the studio waiting for a photo with him.
He's a dreamboat.
Yes, he is.
He's got dreamboat. We only do dreamboats on the Steve Cochran Show.
That's right.
Right. new film, Eighth Grade, is out this week. It's getting great reviews. It's so fun to see this. Bo Burnham, who is a longtime stand-up comedian who really came from YouTube.
Well, at 27.
At 27, long time right? But he had started, he was kind of a YouTube fame. He was an early adapter, and he had done a lot of YouTube bits, and he had turned that into a very successful stage career. If you go, he has specials on Netflix, other places, but he now, if you look at his stuff on YouTube, if you went there right now, Bo Burnham, B-O Burnham, you just see millions and millions of hits. This guy has had a career. He's had a life. He's like the Justin Bieber of comedians in that form. He's like 19 or 18 when he started. He has made his transition to write and direct this new film called Eighth Grade, which is getting all the buzz, which is a story following an eighth grade girl in her final days of eighth grade. And it's a very interesting movie because it's really authentic. The reviews say it's really real. It's not sarcastic. It doesn't roll its eyes at its character. It's really capturing the emotion like someone who had lived it. And it's written by a 27-year-old man.
That's so interesting because I was telling you the details, having just had an eighth grader graduate, I saw those last days of eighth grade firsthand. And watching her interaction with the father, her sitting at the table with her phone and the headphones, little details like her, mm-hmm. the makeup. She uses a beauty blender to put on her makeup in the film. Like, he got those details. I don't know how he, his research panel, he must have.
And he did a tremendous job. The film is great. And he did a tremendous job of really capturing the anxiety mm-hmm. of being in that moment. And even as a man, as a boy in eighth grade, and understanding those moments where you can't understand emotionally, you can't figure out what's happening in front of you. He does such a good job with that. And he does it in a way that he treats it really honest. It's not like, again, it's not parents rolling their eyes at the dramatic teenager.
Right.
It's really from her eyes, and it does a really good job, and I love it because it captures that essence, and yet he never lived it.
And Elsie Fisher, who plays the mm-hmm. Kayla, the main character, she does an excellent job yeah. as well.
So I talked with Bo Burnham for my podcast for The Download. We did sat down for a long time to talk about how he approached this, and I want to play a little bit of it right now. And again, we start this snippet is really asking the fundamental question: how can you write a 13-year-old girl if you've never been a 13-year-old girl?
I certainly didn't sit down to say, okay, I'm going to write some right. young girl's story, because who am I to do that? But it just worked out that way. And I did want to write something about the internet and being young, and I didn't want it to be nostalgic. And, you know, I love nostalgic films, but I wanted to do something visceral, something that didn't feel like, oh, this is a projection of my memory as an eighth grader, because I do think what eighth graders are experiencing and what we're all experiencing right now in this current moment feels new, right. radically right. new. And it being a girl sort of forced me to not project my own experience That's onto her. I sort yeah. of had to approach it like it was World War II or something. You know what I mean? Something like, I researched it like I had never been through eighth grade, you know, because my disconnect from her is twofold. I was never an eighth grade girl, and I was never an eighth grader right now. And I think both of those lend themselves to a very specific experience.
Is it difficult to write a character of a different gender in a different time?
I think it would have been harder to write a 27-year-old man in 1985. I truly, truly think that. Like, I feel like I understand her dispositionally and even, like, neurochemically better than I do people of my own demographic, even now around me. No, it was just trying to write the truth of the emotions, which, you know, nerves and fear and excitement, I think, are the same if you're, you know, going into a pool party, or for me, yes. going to perform at, you know, the Vic Theater here, you know, like, I was having panic attacks backstage at, you know, at a 2,000-seat theater instead of a 20-person pool party, but you know, it's my belief that those the feelings are the same.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's relatable because you sit in the audience and there's anxiety around. There's sweat when yeah. Kayla's at the pool party.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've been at the pool party. Yes. You know it. Whatever that pool party means to you, you've been there.
And we've all probably been at literal pool parties. Literal, and literal right? pool parties were miserable for miserable. Everyone. Yeah.
There's something great though about this coming of age story because it doesn't talk down to the character. It doesn't project.
Yeah.
It's not you as a 27-year-old saying, "Watch out for the dangers of the internet,"
yeah, right,
or
right.
you know what, you know, all the external things that young kids have to go through, drugs, alcohol,
yeah, of course.
Sex, all that kind of stuff, but really focusing on the internal struggle, the internal anxieties of this character. Talk about that, because that is as big to an eighth grader as yes. as the other things that are mentioned.
Yeah, 100%. Well, that's very kind of you, and that was totally the impulse, was to, especially with just the current cultural moment, like anyone that speaks with authority on what's going on right now is, I just think, bogus. Like, no one knows what's right. happening. And yeah, in terms of what she's going through, to say like what you're feeling at that age is big and important, and the questions you're asking yourself are questions that I haven't resolved, even though they're corny sort of like aspirational quotes, like be yourself, put yourself out there, be confident. Do you know how to be yourself? Right. That is an incredibly deep question that's never resolved.
Tough nut. Yeah.
So that was the hope, not just for me, but for all of the crew, all of the adult creatives in the process, to go, this movie is coming to them, not the other way around. You know, we have no authority as adults. They have authority as kids, because we're trying to portray their reality. We're not sitting there as adults going, well, we've been through that and we can tell you now, this is the way you got to navigate this stuff, and just, you know, get an interest in photography and you'll be
right,
cool
right.
or whatever it is. You know, it was my belief that the sort of inner life of a 13-year-old girl is as important as the inner life of a 60-year-old male poet in the woods. You know what I mean? Like, which is like usually what the human condition is only ever sort of allocated to.
Yeah. That's a snippet from the interview with Bo Burnham that I did. You can find it at WGNradio.com as part of the download podcast, or find it any platforms where you digest your podcast. Bo Burnham is the writer and director of the new film Eighth Grade, which is out today in limited release. I believe it hits, it's all nationwide this week, Chicago possibly next week. It's there. Just, you know what? Google it. The film Eighth Grade by Bo Burnham, and Bo Burnham's interview at WGNradio.com. All right.
I think July 13th.
Yeah, so that's today.
You can get it at the Century Center Cinema on Clark Street.
There you go. There you
maybe
go.
Maybe wide release right after that.
Limited.
And you said about getting the podcast. People, if you don't have our app, WGN Radio app, you should get it, because the podcast, being able to listen to podcasts on that is so easy. And better than even if you're on the website or anything like that.
So get the app.
Download that app, and then you can listen to everything. You can search it by show, so you don't even have to. People you don't like, just eliminate those.
There you go. Mary gives you how to navigate the WGN app.
Get what you want on our app.
You get what you want. That's the tagline. That's great. It's 720 WGN coming up. The most valuable person on the planet.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can text, you can call, whatever's on your mind. Let us know. Continuing to watch the stories in the morning, including protests that are starting and the continuing, I guess you'd say, goodwill trip for President Trump in Britain, in Great Britain today. We'll have all of that throughout the day here on 720 WGN. But right now it's time for the most valuable person on the planet, our MVPP. And this today's guest is one that is celebrating a birthday this weekend. And instead of wanting toys or, you know, a new video game or maybe a Lego set, I mean, he's 35. Clothing, other things. Jamal Cole wants you to join him in helping him clean up an Inglewood block. Jamal Cole is the man behind My Block, My Hood, My City, and he is on the line with us now. Jamal, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, man, how you guys doing this morning?
Good. So the impetus for this, your birthday, you're turning 35 years old. What does it mean for you? What does it mean to get people to help you clean up a block?
It's just who I am, man. I live to help people. I live to support others. It's my birthday, but I want to celebrate a superhero. Her name is Tina. She's a block club captain at 68th and Palina. You talk about the lady that, you know, she mows like 15 people's yards on her block. There's like 16 people on her side of the street, 19 people on the other side of the street. She cleans the alley, her and her husband. This lady is a superhero, so she needs support. She needs a little bit of encouragement, a little boost, and I want to come support her on 68th and Palina this Sunday.
And this isn't just a one-off thing for you. Of course, you made news in the wintertime about getting volunteers to help you shovel out people's walkways and others in the neighborhoods. Talk about why you continue to do this. What drives you to be selfless and try to help others?
Well, I just think democracy starts from the block level. You know, it's not like from a city level downward. It's actually from the block level outward. So my philosophy is, what's something simple we can do to change everything? Like, you don't have to have a law degree to shovel your neighbor's snow. You don't have to have a doctorate degree to advocate for a new stop sign in your block. You know, you don't have to have any kind of degree to say, hey, I want to advocate for a new speed bump on my block. You know what I mean? Like, what can you do to change everything? You have the power. You have the control. So I love, man, the communities are my classrooms, and I love going out, talking with block club captains, and I love connecting them to the resources they need. And I'm kind of trying to rethink how volunteerism is done in Chicago. And I can go into that if you would like.
So. Yeah. Where do you think that comes from in your life? Sure. I mean, talk about, what's the impetus for you to do that? Where do you think that comes from?
I just think, like, you know, I just had a daughter on Sunday, or last Monday. Her name is Kennedy.
Oh,
she's 5 days old now. Thank you. And, you know, I named her after, you know, Robert Kennedy. He was a hero of mine. He always said, you know, each time a man stands up for a new ideal or strikes out against injustice, he creates a tiny ripple of hope. And together, those ripples, they can come together to create a wave of change. So our philosophies are similar. Like, I believe, like, the simple things will create a ripple effect throughout Chicago, and it will encourage other people to do the same thing. And so I just that's where it comes from. Most volunteerism in Chicago now is done where a group will, they'll clean up a beach on one day, or 500 people will gather to paint a school, or they'll have an Earth Day event. But meanwhile, the next month, the beach needs to be cleaned up again. So instead of having these big showcases of power, I want to connect 20 volunteers to Block Club A that might need help cleaning up an alley. I want to connect 20 more volunteers to Block Club B, and they might need help picking up the trash at Cole Park. I want to take 20 more volunteers and connect them to Block Club C, who might need help painting, spreading grass on their block. They're trying to, plant new grass. So there's all these opportunity. I want to connect the will to do good with the good that needs to be done. And that's where my block, my city comes in.
Jamal, I don't know the psychology behind it, but there's all these books and things on the most successful people doing simple things like that in their days that have immediate satisfaction, like just make your bed. And so there's such great satisfaction when you complete something where you give money sometimes and you don't actually see immediate change. You get a feedback from that, but everybody can go and clean up your yard, or as you said, clean up a beach, and then you can see right away you've made a difference. And I think that helped people feed off of that, and then that's how it grows.
Thank you. It's about having good habits, and I'm all about the low-hanging fruit. I jog down this block every morning, and I say hi to my neighbors. I wave hello to everybody when I'm jogging down, and I see things. If you want good ideas, you got to go places to get them. They're not going to just hit you in the head one morning. You got to go out and seek them. So I explore. Again, the communities are my classrooms. I enjoy working with block clubs. And this Sunday, July 15th, we're going to be out there on 68th and Polina. We're going to have food. We're going to have a DJ out there. So come out and volunteer at 10 a.m. We're going to have some tasks for everybody. We're going to have lunch and drinks around 1 p.m. And we're just looking for people to come not only support Tina, but come donate if you have a lawnmower to donate. We need that because there's so many block clubs that need help. We need those lawnmowers. We need those weed whackers. We need those Home Depot, gift cards. Come out and donate to us, and we'll continue to support block clubs. So.
And it helps build pride and respect. When you've put some work into something, then when you walk by and if you see a cup on the ground, you're like, hey, I just cleaned that up. And then you're encouraged to continue to keep it going.
Exactly. This is my block. You take ownership. This is my block. Yeah, that's why everybody says, why do you say my block, my hood, my city? Why don't you say our block, our hood? Because that gives ownership away, right?
Right.
When you say
right.
our block.
Someone
when
else
you say
will take
my
care
block,
of it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't, they say, ask not what government can do for you. What can you do for government? Like, ask not what Rahm Emanuel can do for you. What can you do to help out your block? That's our philosophy. And I think it's infectious. It's a good way to just drop the clipboard and get out and meet your neighbor. So
there you go. The most valuable person on the planet today is celebrating his birthday by asking you to volunteer and come down to the party and the opportunity to help volunteer at 6800 South Polina, the 6800 block of South Polina. It's at 10 o'clock starting on Sunday. You can. What's the best way for people to get information about this, Jamal?
They can go right to Facebook and just go My Block, My Hood, My City on Facebook. You'll see it. They can go to our website, which is formyblock.org. And you can always reach out to me via email at jcole@mbmhmc.com. It's just My Block, My Hood, My City.
Well,
so you get it.
Congratulations on the birth of your daughter. Happy birthday. And thank you for giving back to the community as you always do, Jamal, and being the most valuable person on the planet for Friday, July 13th.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for the support.
Peace. There you go. Jamal Cole. How about that? And this is the same story that came out, and people remember it, that he took a bunch of volunteers when the snowstorms were in and went to elderly residents on the south side of Chicago in his neighborhood, and he went, and he would put on Facebook, need people at 4:30, need people at 5:30, and people came out, and they shoveled sidewalks and stairways and gangways and all the kind of stuff that people can't do in those situations. He continues to give back to his community.
It's grassroots, yeah, right there.
There you go. Jamal Cole. Coming up, Troy Murray's going to join us. We'll talk about Marion Hossa's contract and, of course, Marcus Kruger coming back to the Blackhawks.
Campbell with a lead pass. Anisimov over the flyer line to Hossa down the right wing. Moves in back, and he scores! Number 500 in the great career of Marion Hossa! It's a power play goal! Haas beat him with a backhand. Hossa hits for number 500. The Hawks lead 4-0. And congratulations to Marion Hossa, number 500 in his NHL career.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
7:42 here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Steve's come back on Monday. Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Joanne Jeanette, Steve Grzanich. We're with you till 10 o'clock this morning. 312-981-7200, the phone number. Coming up here, we're going to talk Chris Messina. It will be here from Sharp Objects on HBO. He's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. But right now, let's talk Blackhawks. Of course, the big news last night that the contract for Marian Hossa had been traded to the Arizona Coyotes. I had talked to you last week about this, Dave, that we're in a golden age of sports where contracts are being traded as well. But this is a big move for the Blackhawks to be able to shed themselves of this contract and also bring back some familiar faces. On the line with us right now, Troy Murray, of course, does color for the Chicago Blackhawks broadcast, and of course, a longtime Blackhawks
legend
is the right way to say
yes.
It. Yeah, Troy Murray, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. So take us through this. This is actually, even though it's just a contract, and we'll talk about the other players in the deal, this is a big deal for the Blackhawks to get that contract off the books.
It's very significant in a lot of ways. And obviously for the Blackhawks, the last bunch of years, they've dealt with restrictions as far as what they've had under the salary cap. And, getting rid of Marian Hossa's contract completely rather than just on long-term IR during the regular season changes everything as far as what they can do and how they can approach free agents and signing some people some long-term deals. So it's a big step for the Blackhawks. It was costly. Obviously, to have Marian's contract picked up by Arizona, nobody wanted to see Vinny Hinostroza, a local guy, move along as well. Jordan Osterley, in some ways, is good because of the signing of Brandon Manning as a free agent. The Blackhawks were a little bit heavy as far as the contracts that they had on the back end. So Stan did an excellent job in removing a couple things that needed to be removed as far as the contract and then moving forward. With some more cap space and flexibility in what they're able to do here the next couple of years. And I think the addition of Marcus Kruger, the one thing that the Blackhawks were lacking here in the last little while is somebody to back up Jonathan Toews in the faceoff circles. And Marcus Kruger certainly can handle that role and probably will fit in on the fourth line as far as that. And that'd be the defensive centerman that he was here when he was in a Blackhawk uniform in the past.
Troy, I was trying to explain all this to Justin about trading a contract and a salary cap. I mean, let's
explain it to me.
Well, okay. Well, first of all, I mean, it ought to be pointed out. I don't think this can be said enough. Marian Hossa was still playing at a very high level. And if Marian Hossa were still playing, the Blackhawks wouldn't be trading away his contract. I mean, that wasn't the idea here. He still was signed through 2021. I think when he signed the deal, people said, well, that's a long deal, but you watch Marian Hossa over the course of his career. I don't think there were too many people who doubted that he would still be playing when that career ended were it not for the health problems. But that said, explain this, because people have said, well, why does Arizona want this contract? Because he's not going to play. But there is a bottom to the salary cap. Just as there's a top, there's a minimum that teams have to spend. And Arizona is one of the teams that they don't want to get too close to the bottom, right?
Correct. And real quickly, Dave, before I try to explain, the situation, because Arizona has done it before. They've got a lot of young players and, who haven't reached that second level, third level contracts. A lot of their entry level players are making kind of a maximum amount of money. And it's tough for them to just say, listen, we're going to go out and sign players because we have to get to the floor of the salary cap range. But they did it with Chris Pronger, Pavel Datsyuk, Dave Boland. They take a lot of cap space onto their payroll, and in a lot of ways, because of the way that these contracts were structured, Marian Hossa was top heavy as far as he was getting paid a lot at the beginning of his contract above his salary cap average that each team has to put on the books compared to what he is making now. So they assume a major cap hit, which gets them over the floor of the salary cap bottom, the floor of it. But then they also have to only pay out a small amount of money. So for them, it benefits them within the system. People have talked here in the last little while that the collective bargaining agreement is going to be up, and the NHL and the Players Association are going to, be in some, tough negotiations again a couple of years from now. But this is one of the things that they'll be talking about, because it's a loophole that they found in a way to get around it. Is it fair to you know, say that Arizona is doing something wrong. No, because it's well within the rules of what the structure is right now. Mm. But quickly back to Marian Hossa, you know, his career here was phenomenal. I have never met a better individual in my time here with the Blackhawks. He is class from top to bottom. When the Blackhawks were struggling, they started to turn the corner. When they signed Marian Hossa, that was instant credibility to this organization, and they had that stability with a well-known player who came to the Blackhawks. Great credentials, but he came here because he wanted to win. He saw something in the Blackhawks young core group of guys that said, this is where I want to be, and I want to be here long term. He was fantastic for the organization, and I've said this before, guys, I challenge anybody to say a bad word about Marian Hossa. I challenge anybody to say that they didn't have respect for Marian when he was playing the game. He is just one of the all-around best guys that the game has ever seen, and we wish him well, you know, in his future endeavors. It doesn't look like he'll ever play again, obviously, and for the you know, the Blackhawks to make a decision like this, it didn't come easy. Yeah. This was a, you know, internal structured corporate organization decision to move Marian Hossa along, and trust me, guys, it didn't come easy because of the class of Marian Hossa and what he represented to this team and meant to this team for so long during their cup runs for you know, here in the last 10, 11 years.
Yeah, well said.
Hey, Troy, I know you can't read into the future too much, but one of our popular texters, Wendy Snyder, the midday host, she has a lot of questions. So Hossa will not retire a Blackhawk? That sucks. Will he come back like Bickle did for one day so he can retire wearing the sweater? Also, will Arizona even make them him a jersey if he's not playing?
Boy, good questions. You know, that's up to Arizona. You know, Marian Hossa will have to go to Arizona and fail his physical, which basically has already been set in stone. I would hope to think that it's somehow in the future Marian comes back and is a part of the Blackhawks organization. And I think that, you know, for, you know, the Wirtz family to, you know, John McDonough, Jay Blanc, Stan Bowman, all these guys, they understand what Marian Hossa meant to this franchise for so long. So it wouldn't surprise me that the way that the Blackhawks treat, you know, some of their former players, that they would invite him back, give him his moment as a Blackhawk before he finally, you know, fades into the sunset as far as playing in the game as an official player. I think that the Blackhawks would do that somehow, some way, and I hope that they do, and I'm sure that they will.
And, you know, Vinny Hinostroza, being a Chicago guy, I was looking back, Blackhawks TV has this little, like, draft flashback that was posted on June 23rd, 2017, of all these little pictures of when he was a little kid wearing Blackhawks stuff and things like that. I know he said he was shocked yesterday. He's been a part of the organization since he was a baby. You know, when you grow up here, yep, you're a Hawk fan. Is he, like, what's his thought today? Like, is he like, okay, now I move on and this is my next attack? Or, you know, is he still, do you stay sad?
Well, I think, you know, you look at both Vinny Hinostroza and Ryan Hartman and their families, who, you know, I've got to know a little bit here in the last couple of years with father's trips, so on and so forth. You know, they grew up idolizing the Blackhawks. They grew up wanting to be a Blackhawk player. So it's a tough pill to swallow for Vinny. And, you know, if you read some of his comments a little bit earlier this summer, he was so excited to get, you know, a great season of training and ready to come back and help this team, you know, turn the corner and get back in the right direction. So I know it's very tough on Vinny to, you know, find himself in this position. And again, it's just not as cut and dried. Says, well, we're going to trade Vinny Hinostroza. You know, to get the Arizona Coyotes to accept Marian Hossa's contract, you know, there was a price to pay for that. And unfortunately, you know, Arizona obviously sees Vinny Hinostroza as an up-and-coming young player that fits really well into their scheme of things with all the young players that they have in their organization. But you have to make some difficult decisions. And I know Stan didn't want to trade Vinny Hinostroza, but that's the reality of where the Blackhawks were. They put it, you know, they put themselves in a better situation moving forward, but it was costly. And for Vinny, you know, everybody here in the Chicagoland area loves what he did and you know, his efforts to make the Blackhawks a better team and his passion for playing for his hometown team, and certainly wish him the best.
Thanks, Troy. Troy Murray, who does color for the Chicago Blackhawks broadcast here on 720, and of course, former Blackhawks player. Thank you, Troy. Looking forward to the season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. Troy. Anytime. Appreciate it.
That's awesome. Awesome to have Troy Murray. And such an interesting story. And as Joe Romano said in my headphones, I hope maybe they'll make a statue of the contract in Arizona.
Oh, there you go.
That's a good bit. Host a Hall of Famer. I believe so.
Well, you know what? I wanted to get Troy's thoughts, but just real quick. The goal he scored, you can argue the goal he scored in overtime against Nashville, April 24th, 2010, is when the Blackhawks... But now Patrick Kane had scored with 13 seconds left to tie it. Hossa was in the penalty box, comes out of the box, scores that goal. They win the Stanley Cup. As big a goal as we have seen in this era of Blackhawks hockey.
Yeah.
Hossa's one of those. He's like the Roger Federer of hockey, where he makes it look too easy that you don't even always notice that he's the best one on the ice.
He'll be missed. All right, coming up, we've got Chris Messina here. We're going to talk about the HBO show Sharp Objects. He's a star on the show. Of course, he's been a star of film and television for years, including The Mindy Project.
And Dean Richards is tied up with the TV Black Party that they're having today, so he's not going to join us.
So we get Chris all to ourselves.
Get Chris to ourselves.
Hey, how about that?
From the Allstate Skyline Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Coming up, Steve Stone is going to join us. Talk about Chicago White Sox. Think of the big series with the Royals. It's so funny. I wanted to go to the game tonight. And I had talked to Marlene here, and I said, and we were good to go. And, you know, I was going to go with some friends, and Miles was going to go, my son. And we had to switch it. For whatever reason, we couldn't get it together, so we switched the date out. But Miles has a Harry Potter calendar in his room, and he loves to mark up what's coming up at the beginning of the month. So when it turned over to this month, it's his birthday month, it was Voldemort the whole bit, so he marks up what's coming up. So he needs, you know, he puts his birthday, everything. So he put, and he wrote, in this really nice way, he wrote White Sox on the 13th. So every night when he goes to bed, he goes, are we going to the game on Friday? And I'm like, no, it got switched. But he can't switch it because it's in marker.
Because it's on the calendar.
So he almost forgets and then asks again. And then last night, my wife was like, Miles was asking about the game again today. Do you just want to go? And I'm like, it doesn't work that way. Maybe it does. Maybe I could just walk in and be like, can I go to the White Sox game?
But I was back.
Yeah, but I was like, I know he wrote it on the calendar, but he can erase it.
Is this an appeal for tickets right now?
It sounds
anybody
like it.
Out there that wants to take me and my son to the game, that would be great.
Or you could
give
him a second marker to put a scratch through and then a little sad heart, you know, a teardrop or something.
Maybe I'll go in when he's sleeping and just cut out that square. The Friday the 13th square.
You don't have to worry about it, do you?
Yeah,
is he still
going
to keep asking?
Maybe
I just
Miles
avoid him for a couple hours.
Maybe Miles can join Dave and Karen Edit on their 33rd anniversary celebration this evening.
Right. Yes,
you got a nice night planned, limos the whole bit.
No limos.
Okay. It includes
dinner and a show.
You said you're going to be on.
Yeah, we're going to take the train downtown.
Okay. Very romantic.
Yes,
there's nothing more romantic than a Metra.
Well,
during Taste of Chicago,
Metra at 5 o'clock on a Friday. Yeah, you're talking romance.
You've got Taste of Chicago happening, Jimmy Buffett at Wrigley, Windy City Smokeout.
5 o'clock, are you going to the early bird special?
Of course. Consider my age, Steve, will you?
Okay, all right.
He's the same age as my parents, so.
Yeah. Blackhawks passes, convention passes. We forgot to give away those passes. Let's do that. The passes, of course, family
81.
Pack. There you go,
81st
right?
81st caller.
81st caller. Family pack of four passes to the 11th annual Blackhawks convention at the Hilton Chicago, the 27th to the 29th coming up here. Get your convention passes and hotel guest rooms at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. 81.
Maybe 81.
8 plus 1.
8 plus 1, yeah.
8 plus 1 is 9. You want to keep going with that?
Or do
you stay? Ninth caller is going to get the passes at 312-981-7200 in honor of Marian Hossa.
Texter from the 815 that they use whiteout tape on their calendar when a date changes because they write everything in marker too. So you need whiteout tape in Miles's room.
All right. Scott's got something for me. Let's see here. Scott, you got White Sox tickets?
Yeah.
No, you do? Nope, so he bailed. Scott had called up. Joe had just told me that Scott called up with White Sox tickets if I want them.
You're not going to take a lesson.
You think he thought he was winning White Sox tickets?
You can't go tonight because you're hanging out with rappers or something.
Yeah,
right?
that's tomorrow night. Oh, okay. I'll talk about that a little bit later, which is really fun. I don't know if I'm going to do it, but I've been invited to go backstage and on stage with.
I think Dave would agree you are not cool enough to hang out with rappers backstage.
I've been invited.
I wouldn't agree. I would not agree. I'd say Justin would fit right in.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
When I think rap, I think Justin Kaufman.
When you think Bone Thugs and Harmony, you think Justin Kaufman. All right. Well.
The Steve Cochran Show.
On Chicago's very own.
720 WGN.
Hey, 12 in the morning here at 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Dave Ennett. Mary Sandberg. Also Steve Brzanich. Joanne Jeanette. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, Steve Stone's going to join us. Broadcaster for the White Sox, talk about their big series with the Kansas City Royals coming up. And then in the 9 o'clock hour, very excited, we're going to have some of the breakbeat poets, Nate Marshall and Eve Ewing, on the program to talk about the Poetry Block Party Festival, Block Festival, I guess it is, that is coming up. So there's so much going on this weekend in Chicago. There's so much going on. It's tremendous to be able to highlight all the things. I feel like that's been the last two shows just talking about what's coming up this weekend.
It's overwhelming, the options. Yeah. So I'm just going to stay home because there's too many options to engage in. So I can't decide. We're just going to sit on the couch.
Well, Dave's got his wedding anniversary tonight.
Yeah, so I can't. I don't have that option.
You can't pitch that to Karen. Right.
No.
Well, we'll see. Well, we'll talk about that. And also Elvis Presley. We're going to do some live music from Heartbreak Hotel, which is the new musical review, which is at the Water Tower Theater.
Before you joined the show, Justin, we went to Las Vegas in November for the February for the Blackhawks game, actually for Valentine's Day. And they made us, before we left, our people in charge here made us put on Elvis costumes and walk around the building. It was horrible.
I'm not one
to act, so I had to. They kept saying "raise your lip," and I'm like, "I'm not doing that." It was a tortured video. It was at WGNRadio.com.
Oh, okay,
though.
Check it out. Well, the new HBO show Sharp Objects debuted on Sunday night. It stars Amy Adams, Patricia Clarkson, and Chris Messina. The series is based on the amazing book by Gillian Flynn. It's a mystery about a murder, but it's much more than that. As the main character has to come back to her hometown to investigate, answering the question, "Can you ever go home again?" There's a screening of the show at the Chicago History Museum tonight, which is pretty much sold out. Chris Messina is the actor, both film and television, as well as a filmmaker. Messina, most known for his role on the Mindy Project, as well as Damages, and he's in studio this morning. Chris, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
This project, this is much anticipated. Gillian Flynn's book, this amazing book, and she, of course, also the author of Gone Girl. What did you know about her work before you got involved in this project?
I knew Gone Girl. Fortunately, I didn't. I hadn't read anything else. Amy Adams called me and said, "Take a look at this book. I'm doing this," and I couldn't put it down. It's extremely, it's very moving, scary, but it's a heartbreaking piece about these three generations in this town, Wind Gap, mm-hmm. and the abuse and the skeletons in the closet. And she's just a fantastic writer.
It's a really, it is a great book. And I went back to revisit it this week, and it's fun to watch the show and see the similarities, because there's a lot of similarities in the book to what actually comes out in the limited series.
Yeah, Jean-Marc Vallée, who directed Dallas Buyers Club and Wild, Big Little Lies, he has an incredible cinematic language. And so it was on the page. The writing was beautiful, but he finds images that are just piercing, and I think just elevate everything. Elevated all of us. I really felt when I left the project that I might have become a little bit better.
And it's
hopefully.
That's always good,
hopefully.
Right? That's
it's
the idea.
It's one of those that's done where, sometimes pieces can only happen in that town at that time, whatever. I was watching the first episode of it, and I'm like, is this my life? Could I go back? Is there skeletons? And, it's my hometown.
Right.
You feel like it could be you.
Yeah. It's all of us, all of our baggage. It's kind of like a Western in a way. Yeah, she goes back to town to kind of clean it up and fix it up. But Amy Adams is incredible in this, and so is Patricia Clarkson and Elizabeth Perkins, Matt Craven. The cast is phenomenal.
It is a phenomenal cast.
It was a master class in acting.
For you to play a police officer, to play an investigator, what do you get ready? How do you get ready for that kind of role? To play someone who is more of an not necessarily your rank and file police officer, but an investigator in a film.
Nerf guns around the house with my kids help. I talked to the LAPD and drove around with them and talked to a bunch of detectives. I watched a lot of Chinatown, which is just a damn good movie. But what I liked about Chinatown was that he is investigating something and he starts investigating her. And there's a quality of that in this piece.
Absolutely, yeah.
He gets a little bit tangled up in the reporter played by Amy Adams.
As an actor, when you're looking at roles to play, does it usually work out where recommendations or actors that you've worked with say, hey, I've got something, read this? How does your process work? What are you looking for as an actor?
It's always different. I mean, I guess you're looking to be challenged and scared. I think the more scared you are, probably the better the project. Yeah, it's gone several different ways where, you would audition and, get tons of rejections and maybe just get lucky and pass through. And then other times, like this one, where a friend, Amy and I did Julie and Julia together years ago. And
great film.
And thank you. And I always, said to her, I want to work with you again and do something else besides just eat your food and tell you how great it is. So we talked about it and talked about it. I wasn't quite sure if it was going to happen, and I was thrilled that she called.
Chris Messina is in studio. The show, of course, Sharp Objects, airs on HBO on Sunday nights. Amy Adams, Patricia Clarkson, Chris Messina. There is a screening tonight at Chicago History Museum, which is pretty much sold out. Obviously, people want to be able to see something like this.
You can stand around on the sidewalk and see Chris walk in, probably.
Yeah, there might be some. Are you doing side doors to get into this building?
I don't know. No? I don't know.
The History Museum?
Come say hi.
Sharp Objects, Sunday nights. We'll take a quick break here and come back more with Chris Messina.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. Steve Cochran out till Monday, but Dave Ennett, Sandberg's here, Grzanich, Joanne Jeanette, and my guest, Chris Messina. Chris is the star of the new show, Sharp Objects, on HBO, which airs on Sunday nights. There's a screening for it at Chicago History Museum tonight, which is sold out, but you can go and try to, I use the word lightly, harass the talent that's coming in and out of the building. But Chris, for you, I mentioned at the top of this interview that everyone will know you from the Mindy Project and work, and that was a comedy. You have done both in your career, and you seem to go back and forth. Is that difficult? Is that difficult as an actor to spend as much time on a sitcom like you did with Mindy Project and still be able to find dramatic challenges or dramatic motivation as an actor?
I've been lucky to be able to do both. Usually when I'm in a comedy, I want to do a drama. When I'm in a drama, I want to find the funny. I like them both, and I've been lucky. I got to work with your friend, our friend Ike Barinholtz, who's one of the funniest guys I know, and everybody on the Mindy Project was like a class in comedy for me, because I'd never done anything like that. So I was often really nervous, but Ike and Mindy and Ed Weeks, they kind of took me by the hand.
Gillian Flynn, she told the BBC a couple days ago that when she wrote Sharp Objects, it's when the height of Chick Lit was happening, Bridget Jones' Diary and things like that. Mm-hmm. Get the guy, get the shoes. And so she said she wanted to write something about a damaged, dark, screwed up female protagonist as opposed to just the other ones. I always relate to these ones more, these darker, just like in Big Little Lies, all those twisted up girls. I'm more like that than the girl who gets the guy in the shoes and whatnot. When you're working with a character like that, a dark, damaged, screwed up, how do you absorb that you know, in your process for what you're giving her as opposed to an easier ha ha ha.
Yeah, I kind of it's the character I play has a little bit of that cliche male attitude of I can fix her.
Okay.
I can solve her. I can, and I kind of had my own backstory, which, you know, was that my character is just as screwed up as her. Maybe not as screwed up as her, but has wants to be seen, needs to be heard, is alone. So in a way, they were two sides of the same coin. So that kind of, I don't know, attracted me to her, wanted me to get to closer to her, if that makes any sense.
It does.
You mentioned for both for Mindy Project and for Sharp Objects, you talked about class, this idea that they're almost class for you, this idea that you're learning and the experiences of being on these sets. Is that how you approach acting, this idea that you're finding new challenges and new education through these shows?
Yeah, you know, I'm just a fan, really. I mean, I love acting. I love actors. I love Chicago actors. You know, I grew up in the New York theater scene, and when the Chicago actors would either come to you know, transplant over there, or they'd come to the stage and I'd see them work, I was always really in awe of them. I always had the feeling when I was younger that I loved theater, but I was possibly doing it to get somewhere, and the Chicago actors were just doing it for the work. So I always really admired them. That's a side note, so all you Chicago actors out there, keep doing your thing. But for me, I've just been a fan, you know. So when I go to these different sets, I'm trying to steal either. I directed a small film. I want to direct more from Jean-Marc Vallée, or steal from Amy Adams or Patricia Clarkson and say, you know, how can I get better? So, that's the most fun for me.
Sharp Objects is when I said highly anticipated, this is a project that's been being talked about for a while now. Mm-hmm. And it really is. Gillian Flynn was on with me maybe 6-8 months ago talking about it, and that was in the lead, meaning it wasn't just about what she was doing at that moment. She was talking about the project coming up.
Yeah.
When you're associated with a project like that, that's already wrapped, it's already out, but you see how many people are really enticed by what's coming up. Is that talk about that experience of being involved with something that has a lot of buzz.
It's cool. It's not often for me. Unfortunately, it's not often, so I'm going to just hold on to the feeling, I guess, as long as I can. You know, you go around to these cities and you do these press tours and, you know, you promote these things. So it's part of the gig. But when you love something as much as I love this, and you're so proud of it, it's very easy to do. You know, you knew going in the pedigree, the source material was incredible. The book's incredible. Again, Jean-Marc Vallée, and then you have Amy and Patty and HBO, you know, they really know.
They know a thing or two.
Yeah, they know how to take care of their talent. You know, I find myself, and I think this is not new information, but unfortunately, having a tough time getting to the movie theater to see something I want and turning on HBO.
Right.
And going, you know, these are character-driven stories. This Sharp Objects is a gothic thriller. But when you dig in and get inside of it, it's a character-driven story about these three generations of women. And you're really hard-pressed to find that in the movies today. So I turn on HBO.
Yeah.
You know, when you're associated with different roles and people have, you know, character hangover, like they will call you character name, like, oh, you're so-and-so from Mindy Project, etc. Are you okay with this one, if this is the one you're labeled?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be cool if this is your identifier. Yeah.
Often they just say, Dr. Castellano, they say that to me. They don't know my name, or, you know. I mean, you know, when anybody, you know, recognizes you, again, coming from New York theater where most people never saw my off Broadway play, you know, with the theater was like leaking, when the rain was dripping on stage, often we outnumbered the audience, we'd be backstage being like, should we go on? There's more people in the cast and in the theater. So when people recognize you, it's It's nice. It's nice when people say, hey, I'm digging this show. I'm liking this character.
The thing he said about the Chicago actors, that girl we had in from This Is Us mm-hmm. a few weeks ago, she said the same thing about the appreciation for what the work that comes out of here.
Well, there's definitely a distinction, the idea of doing it for the work as opposed to the ambition that you find on the coast.
Yeah, I felt like I learned a lot from the transplants from Chicago, and it turned a corner for me. I'm sure I still was looking for Mike Nichols to see me in it and put me in The Graduate too or something, but the Chicago actors were about the work. They were about the work.
And the best part about that is Mike Nichols came from Chicago. So
right.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. Chris Messina, our guest today. Sharp Objects is on HBO Sunday nights. You also, if you want to go see if you can get into the screener, which is at the screening tonight, which is at the Chicago History Museum. It's sold out, but you can go over there and see if you can finagle, as we do here. Chris Messina, thanks for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
All right. Great. Sharp Objects, Gillian Flynn, Chicago Project. There you go.
The two things I'm watching right now, Sharp Objects and Barry Cavallari. I know, two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Chicago
strong
and both
female
of those, right. There
protagonist,
you go.
Though, yeah.
All right, coming up, Steve Stone's going to talk White Sox baseball.
I believe I am psychic.
The Heat tonight, and a guy on the mound that does not have a big fastball. I think that 13 home runs away is probably going to go by the boards this evening.
My first prediction, I am either going to fly or ruin that family's picnic.
Hey, you've ruined our picnic!
Psych it!
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
You know what we got to do? I'm just realizing we have to do this coming up. We had Ron Kittle on 2 weeks ago. And we had teased out, Dave, this concept of doing a 35th anniversary of the 83 White Sox. Trying to get every single player.
Yeah, you tried to get momentum on that. Yeah.
It's the best idea ever, right?
Steve Cochran shut you down a little bit on that.
Yeah, it is.
Player, just go through the whole lineup. Get to the point where you're starting to get to the secondary guys.
Say some of their names because you're hooked. You just want to say the names.
I just like saying their names, right? There's the Law Brothers, Rudy and Vance, who are not brothers. But the Law Brothers. You've got, who was the shortstop? Was Dubinsky was the shortstop? Who's the...
Well, the Dibber. The Dibber was part of that team.
You've got Julio Cruz at second base. And then you had Pachurik playing first. Kittle was DHing at that. Mm-hmm. Luzinski was... I got the whole...
Oh, that's Luzinski.
Baines.
Yeah.
Got to get all these guys.
And tomorrow they're doing a 93 throwback.
Right. That's what I was getting. They're doing the 93 throwback, which I guess is as successful of a team because they also went to the playoffs and lost in the playoffs. But for whatever reason, for me as a Sox fan, I always think that those 83 Sox is a more popular team, although the 93 Sox were probably better.
Is it a red, blue, and white jersey?
That's the 83.
That's 83.
93 was the good guys wear black.
Guys. But 93 was like last week, wasn't it?
It was 25 years ago. Steve Stone joined us on the line from the White Sox, of course. Steve Stone, this segment brought to you by Let Us Entertain You. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing fine, and you?
I'm doing good. Where are you eating today?
Well, today I was thinking perhaps of Summer House, maybe Oyster Bar over on Halsted. Very nice. Stella Bar in between them if you feel like a pizza.
Look at that. He's going to hit up three joints.
I ate there 2 weeks ago. Summer House, that's one of my favorite spots.
The lighting in that restaurant is so pleasant all the time. You really feel like you're in Santa Monica.
You do.
There you go. Steve, let's talk White Sox baseball. They're back in town. The Kansas City Royals coming to town. What can we make of this weekend series? The White Sox, obviously, I guess the big news would be the injury of Avi Garcia, who looks to have re-injured his hamstring. Do the White Sox, have they grown since Avi came back and now he's out again?
Well, I think they're very happy to have him back because he came back swinging the bat as well as he could possibly swing it. In fact, the last 12 games he played, he hit 8 home runs. So it's sad to see him go because he was really making up for very much of a lost early part of the year. That hamstring was a lot more severe than they thought. It was the better part of 2 months that he was out, maybe a little less than that. But now being out again is not not a great thing for him. I know he's very frustrated. I know he did work pretty hard coming back, getting that stroke grooved again. And it's not easy when you miss that much time in the middle of the season to come back and pick it right up to where he was before. But he was able to do that. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a loss. But, you know, look, the team is struggling in the rebuild, and it's to be expected. So you just lose one more guy, and you just write it off to this year, because this year there's been some really bad injuries up and down through the organization, right. Something that you can't really plan for, but you have those years, and the Sox haven't had a lot of them, but this is one of them.
You know, I wanted to ask you about the injury that was revealed this week to Adolfo, who has been dealing with it, I guess, most of the season with it, an elbow injury, and he's going to have Tommy John surgery. And, Steve, it's not very often you hear of a non-pitcher having that procedure. Are you familiar with other guys who've had that, who are not pitchers? And I would think it's a little bit of a different rehab for a guy who's, in Adolfo's case, who's a DH, an outfielder, as opposed to a guy who's going to be on the mound every other day or every fifth day.
Well, I think you pretty much, yeah. I mean, right. you mentioned it. It is a different rehab. And, you know, for a pitcher where you're looking at anywhere from in the 14 to 18 month range, they think for a position player it's going to be substantially less. They're hoping for the 10-month range. You know, it's somewhere between 10 months and a year. But, yeah, you don't have to look any further than the Minnesota Twins. Miguel Sano also had Tommy John surgery at one point in his career. So there's a few position players that have it. It's not quite as devastating on a hitter than it is on a pitcher. But, you know, they were toying with the idea of Shohei Ohtani having it because he's also got an elbow problem. They decided not to do it, and he's probably going to be back and swing the bat. Just not going to pitch for a while, but it does happen on occasion. It's never great, but it's a lot easier for a position player.
I know the injuries are, you know, devastating and not fun for your on-field play currently, but the MLB pipeline has the Sox as rated as the number two farm system with seven top 100 prospects on their list. So, like, they're like the New England Patriots of baseball. They are just beefing up their pool to pick from. When do they start dipping into those, Steve?
Well, you'd love to see the guys start coming up at the end of this year, and you know, again, a lot of the progress has been derailed by the injuries. But you know, we'll see a couple of those guys. Right now, there really isn't any big need to bring anybody up through the minor league system to this point. But I assume when the rosters are expanding, you're going to see a couple of those guys, and maybe you'll see one or so before that. We don't know exactly yet. They haven't put a timetable on any of these guys. You just had a good feeling that if Michael Kopech had harnessed his control a little bit more, he would have been one of those guys. And Eloy Jimenez, the same thing, but he's hurt for the second time. So hopefully it's just a product of youth that these guys are getting used to. Professional baseball, playing more games, more intensity on a daily basis. Maybe they're not used to that, and their bodies break down sometime in the early going until they get pretty much used to a professional season, which is not easy.
Steve, if you had a rough first half, as the White Sox have, what did you do as a player to get away during the All-Star break? Is that the idea, just get as far away from the game for a few days as you can?
Well, I think that's probably a good philosophy for all these guys that have to recharge their batteries. I mean, it's a difficult thing. Look at the month of June as far as the Sox were concerned. They had two off days in the entire month of June. That's a whole lot of play when you consider, you know, road trips and everything else that you go through. And a team, even if they're young and even if they're strong, they are, you know, they get tired. So you have to shut it down for a bit. The All-Star game is a good time for that, unless, of course, you are an All-Star, which is a thrill anyway. But most of the guys really enjoy the All-Star break. That few days you get away, you get to spend it with your families or whatever it is that you want to do on that given 4 days. But I think it's good. It's good regardless of what kind of first half you had. You'd love to have that winning first half, yeah, but that's right. Not the lot of the Sox these days.
The you know, you think about the All-Star game. Jose Abreu will be starting for the White Sox. He's the lone White Sox that's in the game. He's struggling. He's not having the kind of right now, at least, like the kind of month, July, that you expect from an All-Star first baseman.
Well, the All-Star first baseman was a vote of the fans, and so you know, when they made the majority of their votes, that batting average was looking pretty good. It was in the 280s, the 290s, and now it's he's really gone through a tough time. And you can see it in the expansion of his strike zone. I mean, quite obviously, the Sox aren't doing what anybody wants them to do, and Jose takes it pretty much personally because he's the leading run producer of this team. He's been stuck around 50 for quite some time, and you hate to see him go through this, but the one thing that you can look at and say, you know, he's expanding his strike zone by 6 inches on the outside part of the plate, and there's nobody going to be able to hit that's doing that. So perhaps he was trying to take too much on himself. That's what Ricky Renteria hypothesized the other day, that that he was trying to expand that zone, trying to drive in some runs on pitches that he can't handle, and I think it's a natural tendency. So maybe he can just relax a little bit, back off, go to the All-Star game, enjoy it, and come back and do what Jose Abreu has always done, end up close to 300, end up with 100 driven in, and end up, you know, close to 30 home runs, although all the numbers across the board are down right now.
Yeah.
My stepson did the White Sox baseball camp this summer, and that's exactly mm-hmm. what they told him in the batter's box. Relax a little. Don't keep trying to drive things in.
Yeah. There you go.
It's a difference maker. So, well, you maybe should hang out at the Sox camp.
Any fan of baseball, exactly. Yeah. Any fan of baseball in Chicago, and this goes for decades and generations now, lives for Steve Stone explaining baseball and the lessons learned from this game. I can't tell you how many times my dad would turn to me watching a broadcast, whether it be Cubs or White Sox, saying, "Steve's right. You tie your shoes," or whatever you like. So I will speak for all of Chicago baseball kids and fans, and say thank you for continuing to teach us lessons about the game of baseball each and every broadcast.
Well, it's like, it's a wonderful game, and it's infinitely complex, although it looks very easy on the surface. But it's entertaining, and it's thoughtful, and for me, it's been my life, so I will gladly continue that somewhere down the road.
Wait a minute, how are you going to spend the break?
I'm going to go to Arizona and take a look at my dogs. I've got three of them. They usually like the All-Star break, so I go down and say hello, and that'll be good. And then we'll pick it up right when the All-Star break ends. It's Seattle and Anaheim, so a couple of West Coast teams and a little more travel for the boys.
There you go. Steve Stone on baseball, sponsored by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. Steve, thanks so much.
Take care. Have a good show.
There you go. Steve Stone. I mean that. I can't tell you how many times I've been like, you know, this is right here is where you have to watch out if you're on third base. Yep. Watch out right here. And you're like, oh, I didn't know that.
For you young players.
For you youngsters out there.
Yeah. Do you know, the second half of the White Sox schedule after the break, as Steve mentioned, they open up in Seattle coming out of the break.
That's hard.
And then they go to L.A. and the Angels, you know, you're facing one of the best players in the game, and Mike Trout and Pujols has been hitting home runs. But you look at the month of August, they have a homestand in August, 6 games against the Yankees and Cleveland.
Oh, I'll be there. I'm going to be at all
those
games.
That'd be a pretty good homestand.
Well, the one thing I will say, and he mentioned this before, the White Sox, a young team that is struggling, they get up for these games, where the Yankees and the Red Sox and the A's or Angels and the Mariners, they don't. They're like, they don't care.
They don't have the pressure on them.
Right.
Because, you know, they're going out there. Now, it didn't help them last week against Houston.
Right, right.
But we'll see. Playing at home is a different deal.
Yeah.
And White Sox games, I love that park, are the place to be. I know, Dave, your friend Lou Kanellis, he brought his little girl on her 2-month birthday to her first White Sox game. And I think it was Greek night as well. Yeah. So it was like an extra special. so it's the best place. I love watching games there.
All right, coming up, 9 o'clock hour, we're going to get some live music in studio. Heartbreak Hotel, the new show here in Chicago. A little Elvis Presley coming up in our 9 o'clock hour as we get joined by CLTV.
Can consistently good. Love that he came to our city.
Marian Hossa!
Number 81.
Marian Hossa!
I speak for our fans, our players, and coaches tonight. When I say Marian Hossa, we are proud. You are a Chicago Blackhawk.
Thanks, Hoss. From the station that was always at its best when you were.
Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You can dance every dance.
That was a nice little tribute Duff did for Marian Hossa there. I'll take that.
Very nice. Some great moments.
That's right.
I think he might go into coaching. He looks like a coach to me.
Duffy?
No.
Oh, Hossa.
Yes, Marian Hossa. I think he'd look good on a bench in a suit. You know,
I'd say Chris would be a good. He'd be a good.
Chris
coach
might also
as well.
Be a good.
What you're saying basically is that he would look good in a suit.
Yeah,
right?
I've seen.
Forget
him in
the
a
coaching.
Suit. He does look good in a suit.
Okay.
So
I will say this about Marian Hossa: the one time I went and stalked out the club downtown, Studio Paris, because it was right after one of the downloads, and it was 12 midnight, and the Twitter was going crazy that the Blackhawks were going to come to Studio Paris with the cup. So I walked over there on
Hubbard
Street.
Just so you know, people just call it Paris Club.
Oh,
nobody
sorry.
Says Studio Paris. Just
okay.
Telling you.
Well, I'm being corrected. But the Paris Club. So there was lines of people out there, and then the buses start showing up, and he got off, and he was holding the cup, and they all kind of walked out, and he was the one guy who didn't like just pull the van up. The van pulled right up to the front. They made a little area. The Hawks got off the bus and right into the club, so you stood out there for nothing. And then Marian Hossa was the one guy who like zipped around and came down the street essentially to like wave at all the 250 people that wanted to see him. And he was wearing a backwards hat and a shirt that had like a design on it, like a Hardy kind of Hardy type shirt. So I was like, oh, I didn't pick him for that. Yeah, but I appreciated that he gave us a little wave.
You know, there was a time
he looked a lot younger.
It's hard to believe, but there was a time when he first signed with the Blackhawks where he could walk down Michigan Avenue. I remember he talked about this once on one of our Blackhawks live shows, and it wasn't like people were mobbing him walking down the street, but within a matter of probably weeks, but certainly months, he couldn't go anywhere in town without people knowing who he was.
He does look younger in street clothes than he does as when he's in the hockey gear. And I don't know if it's because other people like Patrick Kane have baby faces or something.
Right.
So all of a sudden, and they, you know, they call him the older man, you know, so he looks. But when he gets his game face on, all of a sudden he's like a scary, intimidating old
he's
man.
An elder statesman.
Yeah.
But when he's in street clothes, you're like, oh, that's right. You guys
like
are all
nice
19.
Guy. Yeah.
It's like all athletes. You see, like, any of the Chicago Bulls, you're like, oh, right, you're 20.
But his conditioning level was that of a 20-year-old.
Yeah, right.
So that
probably
he's like,
helped.
He has the Dave Bennett workout. Where they just are going to stay as fit.
Trust me, I could never do what he does.
Well,
I've seen you do a lot of chin-ups, Dave.
Yeah, well, maybe if we get Hossa in here at some point.
That's not happening.
Chin-up contest?
They can plank.
All right. All right, coming up, two of the stars of Heartbreak Hotel are in studio. We got live music, a little Elvis Presley this morning. Very excited. Also, we're going to talk with poet Nate Marshall about the Poetry Festival, which is coming up, the Chicago Poetry Block Party, which is coming up in the month of July. All that coming up, and CLTV joins us now.
Well, this is definitely Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
It's Steve Cochran Show here at 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, Steve Cochran is back on Monday. Mary Sandberg's here, Dave Ennett, Steve Rzanich, Joanne Jeanette. We welcome in CLTV as well. We give the wave. I was like going back and watching back to see the CLTV wave. Then I shut it off and delete the broadcast.
You watch it in slow motion?
I just speed it up, slow it down.
Do you make the family watch it too so they can critique if you need more elbow in the wave
more
or more
elbow,
hand?
More wavy. Time to get wavy. All right, big show coming up here in the 9 o'clock hours. It's Friday, so you know it's a tremendous show we've got coming up. Nate Marshall is going to talk about the Poetry Block Party, which is coming up this month, and we're going to get a little Elvis Presley. So let's get this show on the road. Mm-hmm. It is Friday morning, which is a perfect morning for little Elvis. Heartbreak Hotels, the new Elvis review, currently on stage at the Broadway Playhouse at the Water Tower on Michigan Avenue. Two of the stars, Eddie Clendenning and Matt Kodaina, are here in studio. They have their guitars, and they are ready with the song live. Here's Just Because.
Well, just because you think you're so pretty. Well, just because your mama thinks you're hot. Well, you caused me to spend all of my money. Honey, you laughed to call me old Santa Claus. Well, I'm telling you now, I'm through with you. Because, well, just because.
In studio here on the Cochran Show, 720 WGN. That was a song, Just Because, sang by two of the stars of the new review at the Broadway Playhouse at the Water Tower, Michigan Avenue. Heartbreak Hotel. That was Eddie Clendenning and Matt Kodaina. They're here in studio. We're going to talk to them in just a second and get some more music live here on 720 WGN. But we'll take our break, Joe, and then we'll come back and we'll talk with the stars and hear some more music here on 720 WGN.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show. You get ready now, go, go, don't you?
It's an Elvis Friday morning here on Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio. Two of the stars of the new show, Heartbreak Hotel, which is at the Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower, Michigan Avenue. Eddie Clendenning plays Elvis. Matt Kodaina plays Scotty Moore. They're in studio right now. Guys, thanks for being here.
How you doing? Thanks for having us.
This is a show that came from Hollywood, and it's a show that is another show that's highly anticipated. We've been waiting for the show to come to Chicago. For you, Eddie, to play Elvis Presley, what do you have to do to get into Elvis?
Well, I mean, it's music that I've been into since I was a kid, and then I had a little bit of experience. I was in a show here called Million Dollar Quartet.
Of course,
that did
yeah.
very well.
Which anybody who saw that loved it,
yeah.
whether you like the genre or not. There's not one person that was disappointed with Million Dollar Quartet.
Yeah, well, my grandma was disappointed that I didn't have more lines. So I think she's going to be happier with this one because you get more of me than you could ever possibly want or wish for.
And you originated Elvis in that Million Dollar Quartet.
I did. I am old.
And for those of you that are just listening, the reason why he plays Elvis is because he looks exactly like Elvis.
He does have an Elvis look. How do you get into Elvis? I mean, what is it about the character? I mean, because there's the man that we know and the musician, but this is, but you also, it's a character.
Yeah, I mean, for me, so I'm a little askew, I guess, sometimes in my interests, and Elvis appealed to me more for all of his like weird little idiosyncratic things, and like he was a weird guy, you know, and you know, he's become this big thing, this sort of mythical, you know, Zeus-like figure in our popular culture, but he was like just a weird like kid with acne, and like he was into a lot of strange stuff, and he wore weird clothes, and he got beat up in school, and he was not the, you know, the cool guy that he kind of grew into or that we think of him as today, and all that stuff always fascinated me. Because I was a weird, scrawny kid getting beat up in school for having a pompadour and stuff. So I identified with the guy. And then this kind of gets into a little bit of, you know, him going through those awkward stages, but also being sort of the first sort of person to really get caught up in that merchandising and marketing machine of show business.
Yeah.
That model didn't really exist before. You know, you had Sinatra with the Bobby Soxers and stuff, but... I mean, this guy had, you know, Colonel Parker was rolling out Elvis Presley lipsticks and Elvis Presley tennis shoes. You know, it was the first time that anyone really did all that. And so within 18 months, this guy went from being a nobody to
the biggest star in the
like
planet.
You were talking about, can't walk down the streets without getting mobbed.
And doing this kind of show, because it's a review, but at the same time, it's the story of Elvis. So for you both of you, this is a question for both of you, you have to be great musicians, you have to be great actors at the same time. This is not just your standard fair, you know, play that you put on stage and you have to learn your lines. You guys are playing the music as well. How hard is that?
For me, it's, I don't know about Matt, but for me, it's easier because I am not an actor at all. I grew up playing in bars and entertaining drunks. So to have a guitar in my hand is like a security blanket. It's something to hide behind. And so for me, it's actually easier. But I guess for someone who was probably trained as an actor and a musician second, it might be a little different. I don't know, Matt.
Yeah, no, for me, standing up there, like, I would feel pretty uncomfortable maybe if I didn't have that guitar to just lean on and know what to do.
Right. You hear that a lot from musicians, the idea that it is almost a blanket in the way that it almost helps them with the spotlight, especially in venues that they're not familiar with.
Absolutely.
In this kind of case, this is a sit-down theater thing. You're right. As musicians, I would assume you're much more comfortable in a concert venue than the curtain opens and here are the musicians.
Absolutely.
I think
No, go ahead, Matt.
I think it feels comfortable, too, just because of the kind of music that we're playing. That's kind of a security thing for us, too, with this Elvis stuff that we've been doing for...
Me and Matt here, we also play in bands together on our own. We have recordings, and we work together a lot, and I've toured together in Europe and the United States. So it's good to have someone that you trust in that way that you can lean on, for sure.
So, Eddie, in Million Dollar Quartet and then in Heartbreak Hotel, you originated the role of Elvis.
Yeah.
And then, Matt, you are the originator of the role in Heartbreak Hotel.
Yes.
Comparing that to other work you've done where you've stepped in after somebody else that people loved played the role, is it better to be the first one, the one starting it, or is it easier once you've seen somebody do it?
Yeah, there's a roadmap, right.
I'm not good at following directions, so I would say it's better to be the first and then let someone else try and figure out what it is that I'm doing as opposed to the other way around. I'm a creature of habit, for sure. So I'd have to undo all of my Eddie-isms, I suppose, before I could ever be functional or useful in that capacity.
I like that. So when you played Elvis in Million Dollar Quartet, and then you're doing it for Heartbreak Hotel, how do you change that character when it's an existing character that we know Elvis, everybody knows Elvis?
Well, just because of the style of show it is and stuff, it wouldn't really lend itself well to like someone just doing a full-on impersonation.
Right.
And I wouldn't be good at that. That's not anything. There are guys who are amazing at that sort of thing. But I think with this, you got to really, because you're trying to tell the human side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to kind of approach it from that way first. And then, like I said, the music is all stuff that I've been doing forever. So that all is kind of second nature. And I mean, I'm not, I don't do all the dancing around in my normal shows, so you got to add a little bit of that in for the people, because that's what they came to see Elvis do. But
specifically the hip thing,
all that stuff, right. Which
Matt, does he do that hip thing all over, like,
oh man,
on your other
stage stand behind
shows?
Him and just
it's obscene. Yeah,
he keeps
obscene.
Time with those hips. No, it's great that he doesn't, it's not that, oh, little mama, oh yeah, look at now.
Yeah,
when I said hello outside, I was expecting, because he has the hair poofed up, that I was going to get an Elvis voice.
Baby,
yeah, that's what I thought.
No, you know, that'd be ridiculous for like the, you know, the theater. You wouldn't understand a thing I'm saying, first of all, because of the way it's mic'd to me. But it'd just be silly. It'd be like a cartoon up there in the middle of a bunch of people acting, you know,
right,
real
actually
actors.
Acting. Yeah.
This, not unlike Million Dollar Quartet, this has the potential to have long runs, meaning this could be something that sticks around because people are coming out not just to find out more about Elvis Presley and the play version of this, but because it's a nostalgia trip.
Yeah.
This concept of people grew up with this music and they want to see it done. And not necessarily all the big, you know, the schloppy kind of hits that he had that everybody knows if you're from 2 years old. This is the early stuff. So how important is it for what do you want people to take away from this show that are coming out to see Heartbreak Hotel?
Well, it's funny. There's a documentary that just came out, a two-part thing called The Searcher, that's really good. And it really focuses on Elvis's influences. And that's something that this show does. It's not just Elvis performing in the show. You know, there's a lot of the rhythm and blues and stuff that he listened to. You know, we have Laverne Baker and Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Roy Brown, and a lot of these old R&B singers are people performing as them in the show, and you get, you know, try to give people a sense of what was in his ear at the time and then how that morphed into what then became what we know as Elvis.
Well, this show is mother-in-law approved. We got tickets for her to see the show last week and she loved it, so you guys are doing good work there. Eddie,
plus that theater is great.
Yes, that is great.
Yeah.
Eddie Clendenning, he plays Elvis Presley. Matt Cadena, plays Scotty Moore. Let's do this. One song on the way out here?
Yeah, sure. We'll do one more.
What song are we going to hear here?
We'll do a little song called Milk Cow Blues.
Milk Cow Blues.
Off the Sun record label.
There you go. Here on 720 WGN. As I just said, Eddie Clendenning, Matt Cadena in studio, getting their guitars on right now. The show Heartbreak Hotel, the new Elvis review, is currently on stage at the Broadway Playhouse at the Water Tower, Michigan Avenue, running kind of extended. Not really extended, but just running now.
Yeah.
Again, right on Michigan Avenue, a great theater. Here they are on 720 WGN. Take it away, guys.
Well, I woke up this morning and I looked out the door. I can tell that old milk cow by the way she lows. Hold it, man. That won't work, huh? What do you say we get a little faster for the morning people, huh? Well, this morning and I looked out the door, I can tell that old milk cow, I can tell the way she low. Well, if you see my milk cow, please ride her on home. I ain't had no milk and butter since that cow have been gone. Well, I try to treat you right day by day. Get out your little prayer book, get out on your knees and pray. Oh, you're gonna need, gonna need your loving daddy's help someday. Well, then you're gonna be sorry you treated me this way. All this milk. Tried everything just to get along with you, so I'm gonna tell you just what I'm gonna do. Well, I'm gonna quit my crying, baby, gonna leave you alone. And if you don't believe I'm leaving, baby, count the days that I'm gonna leave. You'll need your loving daddy's help someday. Well, then you're gonna be sorry you treated me this way.
you go. That's from the new Elvis Review Heartbreak Hotel, which is at the Broadway Playhouse at Watertower, Michigan Avenue. Eddie Clendenning plays Elvis, Matt Codina, Scotty Moore. That was great, you guys. I can't thank you enough for coming in, playing live here on 720 WGN. Much, much more to come here on the show, so stay with us.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran back on Monday. Justin Kaufman, Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Joanne Jeanette. Just had a great week. Joanne, thanks for your contributions.
Oh, thank you. This has been fun.
It's been a lot of fun. Yeah. Mary's back on Monday, but awesome to have you in.
Thanks.
As well as Steve Grzanich as well. Okay, so we wrap up today. Bill and Wendy coming up at 10 o'clock. I'm intrigued on who's going to be filling in for...
Who's the Bill today?
Bill today.
I think it actually might be Bill.
Nah, that's boring.
Yeah, it is boring. Plus, it needs to be somebody that can console Wendy because she's very upset about the Hossa news.
Oh, interesting.
So. Wait, no, Wendy's not here, isn't she? Isn't she going to Disneyland?
Oh, yeah.
And Bill is back.
So
she was texting me on her way to Disneyland this morning about Hossa.
Wow. That's really on her mind.
Yes, it's really on her mind.
Hopefully she'll use Disneyland to cleanse the palate, the Hossa palate, right? Well, coming up in a couple weeks here, I love July. July is the month for Chicago street festivals, for... block parties.
For Dave's 33rd wedding anniversary.
Dave's 33rd yes. wedding anniversary. There's so much going on, including a great event, the Chicago Poetry Block Party, which is...
Just to clarify, Wendy is here. She's going to Disney next week.
Sorry.
I was keeping track.
Joanne's
sorry about
Joanne's
that.
Joanne's parting gift before she leaves. Misinformation.
rumors about Wendy.
The Chicago Poetry Block Party will be at the Austin Town Hall on the west side, 5620 West Lake Street, on the 28th, Saturday 28th. This is a great festival, the third annual. Nate Marshall is a Chicago poet and author of Wild Hundreds and the editor of the Breakbeat Poets, New American Poetry in the Age of Hip-Hop. He's one half of Crescendo Literary, along with Chicago and Eve Ewing. They've partnered with the Poetry Foundation to present this, the third annual Chicago Poetry Block Party. And Nate is here in studio. Nate, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
What's up? Thank you for having me.
So this is a great event. It's a third annual.
Yes.
And this is a big moment. So many people will say, oh, a poetry block party. That sounds like that's an oxymoron. How can you have a block party in poetry? But poetry is expanding and such ever-present right now in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, poetry is such an exciting form. And I think it's a form that's really like fit for the way that we communicate now. Like we stay... in this sort of social media age, communicating in these like short, pithy, exciting ways. And that's what poetry is and what it does. So I think it's a really great time to be a poet and to sort of be interested in poetry.
There's, everything we've seen from whether it be a poetry reading or even what we've seen with the expansion and the evolution of slam poetry in the current society. But most of that takes place indoors. The idea of doing a block party, where does that idea come from?
Because I'm from Chicago and it's so cold for like most of the year. In the summer,
it's cold in June sometimes. Yeah,
right. You're like, I don't want to do anything indoors. And so I think in a lot of ways, right, we think about things like the Blues Fest or the Jazz Fest, where you have folks that come that are like hardcore fans of that genre. And then you have folks that come that just like want to like hang outdoors and like just kick it with the family, and we want poetry to have a similar space.
It does. It's amazing to me too to see how Chicago poetry and the Chicago poetry scene has just exploded in the last 10 years plus. I remember covering poetry, the poetry scene in the 90s in the movie Love Jones. Remember the movie Love Jones?
Of course.
But there was this movement of a Chicago style of poetry that was particularly Chicago, that was being captured in films, as we talked about, and now has become the national style of poetry as we know it.
Yeah, I mean, Chicago has such a long and rich history with poetry going back to Gwendolyn Brooks and Carl Sandburg and all these folks. And even coming up to the sort of current movement of slam poetry really starts in Chicago, over up in Uptown, right at the Green Mill and places like that. So right now it is really an exciting moment. You have folks that are reshaping culture in poetry and beyond, in film and music, that are coming out of, Chicago's artistic scenes and Chicago's poetry scene. And that's really cool.
My sister's doorman, we've had him on our show before. His name is Chris Brown, and he is a poet and he performs poetry, and he also is an actor and things like that. And I didn't know people were doing new poetry, because it seems like when there's such good things already done, how do you come up with new poetry? But it's really it's always going on.
Yeah.
It's just people knowing about it and knowing where to go see it.
For sure, for sure. I mean, you know, it's like any art form, right? Like I think what you're saying is right, and some of that is like because of how we're taught in school, right? Like we're sort of taught poetry as this thing that happened, right? But we would never think about that in terms of, say, like TV or like music, right? We would never think like, oh, well, like, how could I make a new album? There's already so many great ones.
Like, you never think like that, right?
Right.
But you're right. In school, they're like, okay, we're going to do poetry this session and write a poem. And then it's very stressful.
Right.
Because if you're not naturally, you know, it's like, oh.
The amount of poetry is interesting because it's really expressing yourself through words.
Yeah.
And we've seen with Louder Than the Bomb and the way that Chicago's youth movement has really embraced poetry.
Yeah.
If you go and watch Louder Than the Bomb, which is a poetry tournament, a high school poetry tournament, and they have at the Auditorium Theater, you will see thousands of high school kids doing things on that stage that you would never... never expect to see from someone who's 16 years old, 15 years old. And it's because they identify with the words and they express themselves and it's their authentic self. It really is. Poetry is a word that seems to be interpreted in many different ways. But the way I see it is it is using words to express who you are.
No, I think so, right? I think it's that, and I think that there's a dynamism to poetry, and particularly the way that young people do it, right? And so that's one of the things that we're excited about doing with the Poetry Block Party is we're bringing in young folks, we're bringing in established poets, we're having poets perform with musicians, we have bands, we have a DJ, like... We're gonna have a bouncy house. Like it's gonna be a really great event.
Bouncy,
have a
bouncy house makes right? an event. That's
very good. That's all you need.
Done. Right. That's no, it is. Need. That's there's gonna be a bouncy house. That's always the number one question from our kids. Right. Will there be a bouncy
poetry,
house?
Poetry secondary. Bouncy no, house truly, primary.
Right. Truly. My job at the so Eve, who's my partner in Crescendo Literary, she's one of the headlining poets.
She's great, yeah.
I am not headlining. My job is just gonna be I'm just like the bouncer at the bouncy house. That's my job, all events. So.
Nate, I was going to ask, with all the success of local poets and a lot of musicians, Chance the Rapper and Down, they've all come from the poetry scene in Chicago. Does that make it easier for poets coming up? Or is the national publication industry, are they looking at Chicagoans, looking at you and others to say, hey, I want to see if we might have some ability to publish the works of some of these kids? Is it opening doors for the poetry community in Chicago?
Oh, you know, I think it definitely is, right? So, you know, I think a lot about... So I came up as a student in Louder Than a Bomb, and now I work for the organization that puts it on. Shout out to Young Chicago Authors.
The great organization.
But, you know, I think about when I was a student, and there weren't necessarily pathways in the same way, right, where I could look and see a Chance the Rapper or see a Jamila Woods or even someone like myself who has sort of, you know, crafted these developed artistic careers. And so I think for a lot of our young people, yeah, like very much so, that they not only have models, and there's also, you know, now an interest in sort of what they're up to from folks in the city and from folks even beyond the city that wasn't quite there, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
What if I come to the Poetry Block Party on the 28th, what are the highlights? What should I not miss?
Ooh, I mean, you shouldn't miss any of it. Okay, so we're doing workshops. There's going to be Working Bikes, which is a really dope organization. They're going to be coming and I think doing free bike repairs and giving out bikes for kids. Some of the performers that are going to be really exciting. We have Danez Smith, who was a National Book Award finalist this past year. A great musician named Tasha.
Yeah.
Brandon Markell Holmes. Avery R. Young, who's a poet and a musician. He's going to be performing with his band. Eve will be performing.
Great.
Don't miss any of
those
it,
are
really.
Great. I know a lot of those artists. Those are great artists.
Yeah.
So Nate, yesterday when I was leaving work, I drove right outside our office was a Harold's Chicken Shack food truck, and I was on the phone with my sister. And I said, "This is a sign that I should be eating chicken because I love Harold's." And then you've got a piece on Harold's Chicken Shack. That's one of your poems.
Yes.
And I thought, well, look at this is all coming together. The universe is telling me, get chicken, because Nate Marshall is coming in, and he's written a poem about Harold.
Yeah, I have many poems about Harold. I like in my last book, I have, I think, three or four poems about Harold's, and there were more that didn't make it. And I'm working on a book now, and I might put a Harold's. I think this might just be a thing now that, you know, from now until whenever, there's just always a Harold's Chicken poem in the, just to remind people.
Yeah. Just to remind people. It right. says, hey, I'm from Chicago.
Exactly.
I
mean,
well, I smell exactly. I smell commercials. Harold's Chicken Check commercials with Nate Marshall's poetry.
Yo, Harold's Chicken, hit me up.
Hit me up.
Come on.
Nate Marshall's the Chicago poet and author of Wild Hundreds and the editor of the Breakbeat Poets, New American Poetry in the Age of Hip Hop. He's also one half of Crescendo Literary, along with Chicagoan Eve Ewing.
Yeah.
And they have partnered with the Poetry Foundation, presenting the third annual Chicago Poetry Block Party. This year, the Block Party will be at the Austin Town Hall at 5620 West Lake Street, the west side of Chicago. It'll be on Saturday, July 28th. At 3 p.m. Nate, great to have you, and thank good you. Luck with the block party.
Appreciate you.
All right. You know what? We'll get the news coming up here, and then Bill, Wendy, someone, some combination of broadcasters
from
the Bill and Wendy
them.
Show. Is it them?
I think it's
They're
them.
They're both together?
That's
I don't.
The rumor.
You know what? Until I see it with my own eyes, it's the only way we're going. Let's see.
I saw there's a picture somewhere on our website of Frank Fontana feeding Wendy, I believe, a donut.
Okay. Yeah. So there you go.
That's
so like
what
I said,
happened while Bill was away.
I need to see it with my own eyes.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. You gotta go and get
angry at all of my honesty. Well, I stand corrected. They are here together. The Dream Team. Bill left, Wendy Snyder back together again.
Hi, I thought
for one day.
I thought there was some day. Beef. I thought it was beef. But
no,
it's
in the courts. The courts will settle it.
Are you like Tark and Christina? You're making it work for the show, but
yes, Mary,
the
that's what we're trying to do.
Real estate.
Tark?
It's a real estate
flip
show?
Or flop.
Flip or flop.
Yeah. Oh,
flip
yeah,
or flop.
Yeah.
The blonde girl, Christina El Moussa.
Yeah, that's what we're using that as a model,
well, that's a model
for what goes on in the future.
I'm so unhip.
And we're also reviewing old
Frank
Eric
Fontana.
And Kathy tapes
yeah,
to see what went wrong there.
I'm
going to settle this.
When do you go? We have
I'm off next week.
At next week, so that's when Disneyland happens.
Yes.
Are you? Have you got more excited as it gets closer?
Oh my God, I'm in full blown stress mode. I have to pack up the stuff for the dog, dropping him off at a dog sitter. Got to clean my house for someone staying at our house to keep things under control. I have to pack. Jimmy Mac's doing laundry, so...
Justin's too embarrassed to ask you himself, so I'll ask you.
What?
He wants a Mouseketeer hat with his name on it.
All
Could
right.
you just pick that up for him,
they
please?
They have these things at Disneyland. You know this probably from Disney World, where they do the fireworks at the end, or the World of Color if you're on the other side, and it syncs up to the Disney ears, so the lights on Disney ears actually go with the fireworks.
You like that?
I don't know if I like it. I'm just amazed by that technology.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
It's amazing. Well,
they also do that at a Taylor Swift concert with the little band around
they
your wrist.
They stole that.
So, yeah,
Taylor
they,
stole that.
Yes, she did.
Our boss, Stephanie, was just at Disney, and she reported back to me that it's a thing right now to get Minnie Mouse ears.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That's the hot new thing. So.
For the girls.
the
boys
know,
don't usually.
She has daughters, so she didn't really specify girls, but you know.
Yeah.
I think we're beyond the ears.
When we
except for Justin.
To, yeah, I'm still there.
He's back at ears.
When we went for spring break, we went to Disneyland. It was our kind of our last hurrah with Miles, who's now 11, right? And my dad went, my wife's parents went as well. We all went as one
big
family.
Group.
It was a big group, and there was a lot of tension and stress about walking and all that kind of stuff. But my favorite, I told the story before, my favorite story is the big tension when we got there, and what actually eased everybody up was how expensive everything was in the park. So my dad and my mother-in-law and my father-in-law and my mom, they all loved talking how much Diet Coke cost. Like, that was what eased the tension of walking and everything. And my dad would purposely stop at a, you know, at a kiosk just to say, how much for the Diet Coke? And this kid, 16-year-old kid's like, $3.50, sir? He's like, well, it's $3.25 over there. And,
wow.
And I was just like, why are you messing with these 16-year-old kids making minimum
right.
wage?
That's
like,
how adults have fun at Disney,
yeah, that's a
I
good
guess.
Time.
So there, you could steal that, Wendy.
It's just funny because Main Street looks like it's the turn of the century.
Right.
But in the turn of the century, you buy a house for the money that a Coke costs you.
Exactly.
Kind of inaccurate.
What's on the show today?
Oh, boy, I don't even know that. We're going to talk television with Alexander Zalbin, and we're going to talk to our show attorney. We have a show psychologist, a show attorney, about all the big things in the news. Papa John's, that's just an amazing story to me.
By the way, six Major League Baseball teams now have cut their ties to Papa John's.
What about
and the rest are mulling it over right now.
Who's the quarterback who was
Peyton Manning?
Is he done with them?
Well, he had a bunch of franchises, but he was selling them off, wasn't he, Dave?
I think so.
Yeah,
he had a.
But
had
if
a bunch
the guy who
Colorado.
Said the wrong thing steps down, does that mean
from the board?
Yeah.
But it's still Papa owner. John's. And see, that's what's weird. I just heard this morning they're removing his image.
His image.
But they should change the name.
Yeah. Well, they should have done that without the scandal. That guy being on a poster, like, I'm going to eat pizza because this guy is standing there. That doesn't do it for me.
It's not that good, I got to tell you. That's all I want to do is look at it. I don't want to eat
it. I don't trust pizza places when the owner's on the poster. No, show me the pizza. Have a good show.